I'd like to welcome the Minister of Communication, Honourable P.V. Nyanda, also the delegates from the various entities, Department of Communications, ICASA, CENTEC, SABC, welcome to all of you. A special word of welcome, there's a delegation from Japan here. It is led by the Vice Minister for Policy Coordination, Minister of Internal Affairs and Communication. So they are seated at the back there. Very warm welcome to the delegation. And please feel welcome. Is somebody interpreting? Are you able to understand English? You are following. Thank you very much then. Sorry? All right, we've got quite a long program in front of us today. I think we yet to discuss our state of readiness and preparation for migration from the analog to the digital, digital migration. clearly, this is a project of national importance. The state is likely to invest huge sums of money, public money, for this particular project. And it could have, I think, very significant impact in terms of socio-economic development and development of the ICT sector as a whole. In the previous committee, we had briefings from the SABC, ICASA, CENTEC, I think probably 18 months or 2 years ago almost. I can't remember the exact date. 2 years ago. I think a lot of work has happened since then, and we thought that it might be prudent to get an update from the various state entities and the department as to where we are with this particular project. Of course, in the interim, there's been a change of administration, same party in power but new faces, both in terms of the ministry and the administration itself, the department. And there's been a lot of engagement and discussion on this particular theme and topic. And it is for that reason, because of its importance, its strategic importance in the sector as a whole, the committee thought it advisable to have an update from the various entities, a report, and also for us to debate and discuss the issues that might be on the public agenda. So with those few introductory comments, I'd like to invite the Minister of Communications to do the first presentation. I know he wants to say a few words, and then possibly followed by a formal presentation by the department. Minister, over to you.
Thanks, Chairperson and honorable members and all the dignitaries present here. We have prepared a very comprehensive briefing because the scope as defined by the request seemed to suggest such a comprehensive briefing. From why we have this BDM or Broadcasting Digital Migration or DTT, Digital Terrestrial Television. as you say, you have received these briefings before, and we have been generally updating civil society. We have had colloquiums and we have had discussions at many levels on this. recently, we had you must have read that we just dissolved the Digital Zonga, which is the advisory body to the Minister of Communications on digital migration. So you appreciate, and I'm sure you have been keeping yourself abreast of developments around digital migration as such. but we have prepared this comprehensive briefing so that we update you and perhaps remind you of why there is this migration. But at the same time, I suspect that because of recent developments and around these issues and the things which have been topical in the media relating to standards that we might want to get more about this, explanation about this. That aspect I'm going to deal with myself, but in the presentation itself, the two presenters from the Department of Communications, DDG, Acting DDG, Gift Buthelezi, as well as the Director Manzini, are going to make the comprehensive presentation. But I will deal with when it comes to the standards. I will try to explain where we are, because I'm aware that this is now in the public domain as something that is of concern to many people. Thanks, Chair. I will ask Mutelezi to.
Thank you, Minister. Thanks, Chair, and greetings to all the honourable members and our colleagues in the media and our colleagues in the SOEs and our guests from Japan and elsewhere, and also in the industry and sector. I'll quickly give the background of why we're here on this migration issue. South Africa is a member of the International Telecommunications Union, as you know, a UN specialized unit agency responsible for broadcasting and telecom regulations. At the ITU regional conference, which is RRC06, held in Geneva in 2006, a member countries resolved that analog signals will be switched off on June 2015. SA is gearing towards compliance with these timelines or timelines of this resolution. But SA, it should be noted also very well, has not ratified this resolution. Activities in transition as part of the introduction is that the Minister of Communication then introduced the Digital Migration Working Group in 2005, and it then worked on some of the initial phases of the areas of migration, and they ended their first report in November 2006. And this was subject to discussion by Cabinet, and it announced that there will be then digital timelines that are provided. Digital migration policy then was approved by Cabinet, and I think between 2007 and 8, but in 2008 in particular, because the draft was put in place in 2007. The whole objective of the migration policy was to establish a policy environment within broadcasting digital migration from which actually digital migration is going to be implemented, to encourage TV viewers on uptake of digital terrestrial television, to ensure ensuring a future existing services accommodate new services that will be brought in by the migration opportunity, to give effect to the decision to implement digital migration within 3-year dual illumination period, to provide a framework for designating DTC network of frequencies to cater for public broadcasting, commercial broadcasting, as well as mobile broadcasting services as an added service, to encourage investment in the provision of the production of new content services, to provide for the establishment of the body referred to as digital zone. And that is not only limited to the digital zone. Later on, we'll realize the presentation, we'll talk about the local and digital content advisory council that will be responsible for local content in particular. The benefits of migration to digital television were as follows. One, it uses frequency, radio frequency spectrum more efficient than the analog technologies. Digital TV offers clear pictures of free-to-air channels and fewer reception problems. It removes the constraints on the amount of content delivered under the analog transmission. Opportunities to facilitate investment in a high-tech manufacturing sector for set-top boxes. It offers potential for more interactive services to cater for people with visual and hearing impairments. But for us, the industry itself, the regulation of the industry is very much important than the box itself. So we're looking at restoring and reviving the whole electronic manufacturing industry. So BDM is just an entry, but the agenda is bigger than that, to try and have our own and stop even buying USBs from elsewhere. We want to have our own USBs that are manufactured in South Africa. We will then move to some of the fundamental key policy decisions that were taken and are being implemented also by our minister now as part of the migration, because it's a whole the value chain. It has various aspects. So standard is just part of it. Manufacturing of set-top is just part of it. But there are other related issues. The content industry is an industry on its own. It also has its own package and a greater depth of understanding that we need to do or work on when you talk about migration. Then we talk about spectrum, which is also has its own field on its own as a sphere of specialization. Thank you.
Thanks, Captain. So I'll jump ahead and just move on with the key policy decisions that were taken in relation to the BDM policy. The key policy decision one is that broadcasting digital signal switch on and analog switch off was set forth as November 1st, 2008 up to 1st November 2011, where analog signals will switch off. Between November 2008 and 2011, both broadcasting signals and analog signal will be transmitted, thus providing for 3 years dual illumination. Broadcasting digital signal coverage, this will be achieved in a phased manner, vis-à-vis investment, and also allowing a phased digital migration from regions to region. And key policy in two will be the network of frequencies. How do we utilize the spectrum that we'll be having as we migrate? Broadcast signal and multi-channel distribution have been signaled as a ring fence category of ECA, and in terms of Section 8G of the Broadcasting Act, the network of radio frequencies dedicated to public broadcasting shall be co-assigned to and managed by centers as a common carrier on a non-preferential and non-discriminatory basis. Centec must also provide broadcasting signal distribution to commercial broadcasters, taking into consideration Section 63 of the ECA, which allows for self-provisioning by broadcasters. Such services shall also be provided on non-preferential and non-discriminatory basis. Network of frequencies for digital TV. The public broadcaster shall cater for public regional television channels, as well as channels prioritizing education, health, sports, and interactive services, parliamentary and government services, that is the need. And also cater for regional television services, which will be required to provide an open window for community television broadcasting for a minimum period to be determined. ICASA will provide the necessary regulations and guidelines as we're going forward. I think that ICASA has already done some of the work around the DGT regulation. And then local and digital content development. Access to public broadcasting service by all South Africans is going to continue in the digital era. Local content quotas shall continue, and I think ICASA has already started defining the issues of content aspect in the digital era. And also the mass carrier rules will continue. ICASA will develop an appropriate legal framework also covering this, which ICASA thinks they've already started working on this. We can point out that public services are available in all platforms. And what is ongoing at present, I think I'll mention to the House that local and digital content advisory council, finalization of member nominations is already due by June 15, 2010. The adverts went out, public adverts, and then there were submissions and nominations. And we are intending to finalize this before June 16, 2010. And also, a local content hosted on six local content in Dabo hosted on 6 and 7 May. This will culminate in the promotion of local content and establishment of content generation hub in the provinces and rural areas. This to ensure that we do have sufficient content in the digital era, which we know is a multi-platform and multi-channel environment. That we do. Create jobs, create community spin-off out of this digital, not only the issue of manufacturing, but also the issue for production in all regions, both rural and urban areas. And also, a community broadcasting summit was also held on the 24th and 25th May 2010, which ended up resulting into a community broadcasting charter, which was adopted within the summit. So this is an ongoing work on the sidelines in relation to digital migration program. Digital Zonga, digital Zonga to oversee the implementation of BDM policy in SA, it will be in place until 2016. So we interested, like, even once we've wrapped up, digital Zonga should be still making a point, like, all the areas of the country are covered, rural areas, issues of coverage, antennas, and all the like. That all South Africans are covered in the digital era. We don't want what was happening, just how it was happening in the analog era to continue in the digital environment. And then King, among its functions, are consumer education and awareness, manage a help desk, public support, and liaison with relevant stakeholders. And then now the issues which are seen out around the implementation plan. We've got a set up of marketing strategy, we've got scheme for ownership support framework, and we've got consumer awareness campaign. It's a critical success. The set up is a critical success for this immigration, and they should be affordable, therefore that's very important for us. And the prices are determined by technology specification and also timing of the STP rollout. But also needs to ensure that STPs are future-proof and allow for applications for customers and government that require. When I talk about future-proof, we say that it should not be just a dumb box. It should not just be receiving digital signals. It should do more. It should play a space in the issue of bridging digital divide. It should not just be a talk show. We should see how this box encompasses the issues of interstate services, e-government services, that it should be more in making projects that vulnerable communities are able now to interact and being the receiver of this, being a participant in this information society and knowledge economy. And also, specification will enable the delivery of e-government services as well as provision of the box integrity in addition to substandard. The specification of the underlying STP control software. And especially seeks to support the building of competitive manufacturing industry, encourage ICT sector growth, maximize the BE activities initiatives, and also provide a model for African digitization, create jobs and businesses. The strategy has been widely constructed and presented to cluster and also is ready for cabinet approval processes. Scheme for ownership support. The concern of emphasizing the poor TV household has its origin in the Digital Migration Working Group report, which was a report which was provided by the Digital Migration Working Group established by Minister. And it recalls that many vulnerable TV households may not afford the set-top box. The government approved a scheme for ownership, which proposed that government will provide 70% incentive for the STP, for STPs assist 5 million poor TV owning households. In this regard, 2.5 billion was earmarked to be funded through a Universal Service Access Fund, USAF. The SOS for digital set-top boxes has been developed and widely consulted within government system and is ready to be taken through the cabinet process. I think a minister will be talking to standards. I'm not sure whether I should go for here, but anyway, safe to say that we are in an era where we had adopted a standard, where we had a preferred standard as far back as 6 years ago. Much has happened and evolved within the space of time. So I think we'll take care of that. So I'll just speak at the issues of standard. And then let me just come to key milestones that we need to finalize. I think a set of such a key milestone is define and formalize specifications, produce rules of operation D-book, develop STP prototypes, and establish a specified performance system, and design of prototypes. Define the research strategy, how these boxes they evolve, and from the tail, it can be entities across office, and how eventually they reach the consumer out there. And then the service strategy, which I've already spoken to, and then the role out of manufacturing, and the filling of the STP supply chain, which is still retail and accessing of these boxes. And digital consumer communication, which is going to be overseen by Digital Zonga, and the digital broadcasting commercial launch. Those are the key implementation milestones that we are looking at present. digital donor. The key function of digital donor will be to roll out communication campaign on this migration. And also, if you need to use other, working together with other stakeholders, develop a consumer aware campaign using variety of media, which is television, radio, community radio, online, in store post offices, and in some cases, partner with government a project or programs of using these. Signal distribution, a transmitter rollout will be done in terms of the approved frequency plan. It has finalized the DC frequency plan. DC regulations make provision for the allocation of multiplexes to grant broadcasters. A pilot broadcaster, in collaboration with other broadcasters, have been conducting a DC pilot broadcasting over 12 months. The broadcasters have learned valuable practical lessons from this pilot. Pilot broadcaster is winding down the pilot and is finalizing the pilot research report. SABC planning for DC launch will be influenced by final outcomes of the DC standards revision. In conclusion, I need to say that this migration is an enormous and a complex national project. Much work is required to coordinate efforts of stakeholders and drive this migration, and support of all stakeholders is required and appreciated. Thank you.
Thanks to the presenters, and I now Chair, just wish to brief the committee briefly on the issue of standards, which, as I said earlier on, has become topical because you will have read that we had a symposium recently and we announced publicly that we are reviewing the issue of the standard now. The standard that we talk about is the DVB-T standard. At the World Radio Conference in 2006, there was a decision or a proposal on standards. You know, Africa belongs in what is called Region 1, which is Europe, Africa. And it was proposed there that the European standard, or this DVB-T standard, which I will call from here, from now on the European standard, be adopted for Region 1. Of course, that is a suggestion that is made that is not taken lightly, and there were a few countries who registered reservations on that radio conference decision of 2006. South Africa was one of them. Angola also was one of those countries, I think, one other in Africa. Nevertheless, we proceeded to cabinet in 2008 to propose the adoption of the DVB-T standard. So we were proceeding as we were entering this migration phase on the basis of an assumed standard DVB-T, European standard, such that then the trials that subsequently took place were on the DVB-T standard. Mr. Manzini has indicated that Centec has been operating since 2008 November, a dual broadcasting system, dual signal system. So since then, we've both analog and digital broadcasting. And Centec has therefore invested in infrastructure that is DVB-T aligned. And this because, as I said, also because now, apart from the World Radio Conference decisions, cabinet decision as well, so we've been all along pursuing, and I think also industry, people have been taking the posture in whatever investments that they would be, have been making, assuming that we are going the DVB-T standard, given all the conjuncture of experience and circumstances, being part of the Africa bloc, being part of Region 1, and also because of decisions, in spite of reservations that were made. Now, this DVB-T standard, which is a European standard, on which we have been basing our experience on dual illumination, has also evolved. So what you will see in relation to the standard DVB-T now is not the same as the DVB-T that the Europeans, for instance, began to operate under. There is now what is called DVB-T2, European Standard 2, because of the limitations that DVB-T1 had, and because of technological developments in the field of ICT, 2 years is a very long time, so that you get technological developments within a very short space of time. So that standard that was adopted by Europeans actually become obsolete, or almost obsolete, and has to be adjusted. They have had to adopt a new standard. As I said, that the Centec has based its trials on the DVB-T standard. Now, concomitant with, alongside this, has been the development of a standard by the Japanese and later by the Brazilians called the ISDB-T, Integrated Services Broadcasting Standard. Now, this is a so-called Japanese standard. The Brazilians have adopted the standard. Not only have they adopted the standard, they've adapted the standard. Now, this Japanese standard is what you want to call an open source standard, which you can adapt to your own developmental needs, or your own societal needs, or your own technical needs, which the Japanese did then, to develop their own brand of standard based on the Japanese standard. And the reason for that, among other things, is because, as I said, it's an open source standard. And the other standard, the European standard, not as open source as the Japanese standard, according to them. If you want to adapt that standard, then there are certain restrictions that or certain requirements in terms of the intellectual property and royalties that people then have to pay. In any case, there are royalties that you have to pay for the standard and its continual use. So a team from the DA, from the DOC went to Brazil, from the DOC. Oh, well, it could have been a company. Went to Brazil and came back, informed about how flexible this the Japanese standard is, and briefed me after their visit and suggested, and I agreed to the proposal that we investigate whether we should not relook at the issue of the standard. But that investigation should be done with the participation of industry, as well as our SOEs, so that whatever decision we reach should be informed by interactions, discussions among ourselves and industry. There was a symposium called where the participants, or rather the owners of the technology, if you like, the Europeans, came and presented on their standards, the Japanese, the Brazilians. And a report is being prepared currently by the department to me. There was a preliminary report given. Essentially that, you know, between standard, European standard 2 and Japanese standard, there's very little technical difference. So ISDBT and DVDT 2 show very little difference in terms of their technical capabilities. But there are technical issues as well. For instance, the coverage. If you have a mast from the Japanese standard, the mast has got a wider coverage. And so on, but very little. As well as the Japanese standard has got an inbuilt capability for mobile television as well. So, as I said, I was briefed, but then I was briefed at the time that there was going to be a SADC Ministers Conference, which took place 3 weeks ago, where this was one of the subjects for discussion, because you appreciate that all the players or the owners of the technology have been going around the region because everybody is interested that their technology should be the one that is adopted, especially in the huge African market. So this is one of the things that was discussed at SADC, at the ministers' conference there. again there the incumbents came and made presentations. The Japanese, the Brazilians, the Europeans. The Europeans this time sent a high-powered delegation. And they made their presentations. At the end of which, it was determined there that we would give our experts from the region. This will be a regional investigation with a timeline of two months to come up to look at the standards with respect to everything. What will best suit the region, and by inference as well, the continent, but the region, because that is SADC, because one of the if we adopt a standard, we can't adopt a standard in South Africa that that is not a regional standard because of problems around the band plan, so that when you have to adopt the same standard, so that there is no interference, you are protected from interference by people who are operating who could be operating another standard. So it's important that as a region we move together on the adoption of a standard. Now, the brief that has been given to this task team that is investigating this thing is to ensure that they look at, of course, primarily whether the robustness of the standard, the flexibility of the standard, the advantages in terms of I'm talking about the technology now. Flexibility of the technology, whether this technology will do the things that Mr. Manzino was talking about of interactivity, so that we promote e-governance, we promote e-health, we promote e-education, and that our people are going to be empowered using that standard. Also, not only that, because that's a technical aspect, how socioeconomically is going to benefit South Africans. How, because it has got to be looked at as well in relation to what we have that the presenters spoke about, set-top box manufacturing strategy, development of SMMEs in South Africa with respect to electronics industry, so that we are going to look, they must look at all those things. They must also look at what has industry invested in relation to the TVBT standard, because we cannot ignore that, and we are not the only player. Tanzania also has invested in TVBT standard infrastructure. We must look at what the implications of adopting another standard will be on that investment. So it must be an all-encompassing investigation looking at the cost and benefit of whatever decision we want to take. Our industrial development strategy with respect to set-top boxes, as I said, consider investments already made. And I think in relation to investments already made, for instance, Sentech is one of the biggest investors. And what we have established is that it may not necessarily be that investment is jettisoned, because it may be a software issue around changing. Because in any event, even DVB-T2 is different. You'll have to adjust with respect to the investments that has been made. So whatever decision is taken, and the minister, for instance, from Lesotho, another said, people must conduct a thorough and prejudiced investigation, so that everything that would, well, of course, there won't be unpolitical considerations. There will also be political considerations when we consider this thing. but we want to make this such that local industry is not actually prejudiced following this decision, and that whatever prejudices we look into, and that Centec as well, who, because we as government have invested a lot in this dual illumination process, which Centec is championing. So that, in short, is where we are. We are conducting a review in order that, in the end, it is our country. It may be in the industry, certainly not prejudiced, but in the ultimate end, is to the benefit of South Africans, the consumers, the industry, small, medium, and micro enterprises are advantaged, and our country benefits in the end. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Minister and DOC official. Can we take this questions of clarity, not discussion, because we've got a number of other presentations on the same topic. So just questions of clarity. Mr. Van der Bath and Patricia Dillon.
Thank you, the Chairperson. Through you, I would just want to ask the Minister a couple of questions. Why this whole standard thing was put on the review, the reason why. But this, as we all know, this is very technical, and I'm not an electronic engineer or whatever. It came to my attention, sir, that we, Centec especially, is geared for that they're working on 8 megahertz. And this Japanese Brazil system is working on a 6 megahertz. So, as I see, there has to be made a lot of changes to from Centec, which it will cost a lot of money to adjust to 6 megahertz. And there's another factor, sir, it came also to my attention that the prices of the set-top boxes will be much higher if South Africa move to the Japanese standard. And as I understand it, there's not even a price for a set-top box on the 6 megahertz. And this will have a huge impact on the provision of set-top boxes for the poor people in South Africa. So, as I was informed through people in the industry, this is a move backwards to South Africa, and it will sort of halt this whole process, and some of the people can't understand why South Africa moved to the Japanese standard. And there's a lot of political noises made around about it. I'm not going into that now. If you can just give me answers on that, please. Thank you, Chairperson.
Well, South Africa has not moved to any standard. We are conducting a review, and among the things that will be considered is the whole issue of the efficiency of the spectrum, and as well as the prices. If we find on the balance of evidence that we are going to have to pay more for the standard, that for the alternative standard, you remember that we are now operating using dual illumination. Centec has based itself on the DVB-T standard. So if we're going to move to the Japanese standard, it must have definite advantages in terms of cost, in terms of everything. On balance, it must offer the best for South Africans. And there is no way in which we are going to adopt any standard before we go back to cabinet. You know, this is a cabinet decision on the DVB-T standard. I've not even gone back to cabinet to say, look, we are reviewing this standard. I've not even done that yet. Because I don't even have the report. I have not even prepared the report that comes from SADC to say, you know, SADC says, let's look at the standard for perhaps it may be beneficial to Africa. So it's really still a moot question whether we're moving. The issue is whether we should not debate, whether we should not investigate. Should we not really investigate what is best for our country, what is best for our people, what is best for industry, what is best for everybody? That's what we're doing. Even the question of 8 and 6 megahertz, all those things are the technical things that this team is going to have to go into in order for us to determine what. I know that people in industry, they are very, very strong lobbies, and already you begin to see the deity even in the media of people trying to, you know, to paint other people in a certain light. That is why I think it is important that I came here to brief you so that you understand that this is something that we are doing not because we want to favor anybody, but because we want to ensure that in the end, you yourself are happy that we have done a thorough job in order to determine what's done. We don't want to be captive to any market, captive to any product. We're a huge market in Africa. And if we can use our power, and especially power as a region, to get the best price for anything that we do, we need to do that. We have to do that. We can't just be captive to Europe or captive to Japan or captive to the Chinese. No. We've got to use our market power as well.
Thank you, Chairperson. Can I just raise an issue first about the process that we are following this morning? We've been given a set of documents as we arrived in the meeting this morning. It is very difficult to follow what the minister was presenting to us because we didn't have time to go through all of this documentation. So if the portfolio committee chairperson must play a role in the process, like the minister say, there is no decision yet at the review process. I want to propose then that we need more time to study these documents, to understand them, but as a committee that we invite the Brazilians to make a presentation to us, the Europeans and the Japanese, and that we develop some kind of a framework to say what are the issues that they must, almost like a comparative analysis. Because then we can decide finally or advise the minister what is our decision on what is best for our country. You know, the cost, the technical differences, the production of the set-up boxes locally, you know, everything related to this, but more in a table form. Because right now I wasn't able to follow what the minister was saying because there was... You saw me scratching here. I was trying to see whether there's anything that I could read from while the minister was speaking, but it wasn't there. So I think it's a very important project that we need to be taken along with and also understanding the process. Now, my question on standards. Minister mentioned that the different standards. And I want to know whether these standards are compulsory for a country to follow, or must a country make sure that you comply with a certain standard? Because if the standard is so high or it's prescribed a very costly way forward, is there any room for South Africa as a country to say, but no, this standard, or for the continent, the standard that was set, we cannot afford at the moment. So how important role does standard play in this whole setup? Thank you.
Uh, Well, the process, I think that obviously it's an internal matter for the portfolio committee. What I wasn't reading from any document that's been given me. I was just making a presentation of things as I know they stand. Really, presenters here did indicate that I'm going to talk on the standards issue. I think we have a few notes there on the standards issue, but I delved into details. Things they don't talk about the SADC meeting, for instance. They don't talk about that and the decisions that were taken there. I did say that I have not even taken that report to cabinet because it's a thing of 2 weeks ago that I've been traveling. So we have not had the opportunity to take the report to cabinet. So on the issue of process, yes, as far as my presentation is concerned, it's not encapsulated in any document that you may have in front of you. But perhaps I may present a series of argument in some form for the committee members. And I hope people are taking notes so that at least the things that I indicated can then be summarized in that fashion. Because I was really trying to give a rationale for why we are reviewing the standard. There is, and the reason why was the question of the second question that you raised is actually the reason why we are doing this, because it's not compulsory. We've got to do things in the best interest of ourselves. But there are certain compulsions, there are certain constraints outside which we cannot act. If, for instance, the whole region said, the whole Africa said, we are on DVBT, there's no way we can say, no, we are not going there, because otherwise there'll be chaos, there'll be interference in our broadcast system. So that's why there's understanding, there's got to be understanding, that's why the ITU will always have prescriptions as to you are going to operate within this, and that's why there are always conferences of the ITU from time to time to determine some of these things. And before, even if we're great in cabinet, before we ratify anything in parliament, it doesn't hold. Thanks.
Kulwani?
Thanks. Thanks, Minister, for your political input on the issue of the standards. My question here is the short one. I've been assured by the minister input and also the document from DOC in relation to what our main worry was, the issue of the investment by the broadcasters in terms of the whole process. I'm sure in your input and the document is trying to say you are also taking that into consideration. Because when I read most of the submission from the broadcasters, most of their worries is around the investment which has already been put in place and the opportunity cost thereof of trying to change and so on. But I think we have tried to deal with those matters. But the issue which I just wanted to check is around the what will the process now mean in terms of switching off 2011? This entire process is unfolding now. What will it mean, translating to the initial date for 2011 and so switch off and so on? I think that's the question which I will be interested to ask. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks. It may be an unrelated manner, but it actually is related, because there are arguments and there are inputs to the effect that if there is a change, if we adopt another standard, it may add a few months into into the migration process. So there is that likelihood. In any event, the whole issue of the cut-off date of the switch off from Juan to digital migration is something that I think ICASA can best talk to, because they are the ones who issue the regulations, and I read something to the effect that they have another date that they were thinking. I think looking at the preparations by the individual broadcasters and themselves and regulations around this thing, they were mooting a date that is not the same as we adopted in cabinet of November 2011. So there are many things that can impact on the date. And I think many people have been really skeptical about whether November 11 is achievable. But before there is anything that is presented to at least the ministry and the minister about which says definitely that we can't achieve that milestone, then we'll work on that. And then, of course, if when that happens, we'll have to then to take this thing to cabinet to say that November 11, that 2011 that you suggested, November 1, 2011, is not achievable. But for now, we're working on that basis. As I said, however, the issue of the standards is one of the important issues relating to migration, and it may be that it pushes the date further to the right.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'm happy that Honourable Kulwane has made reference to some of the issues, and he also said thanks to the Minister for his political input. Because as I see it, it is really very disconcerting that half of the period of the dual illumination period has already passed. We're right here now, we're reaching towards this year, November 2010, and it remains 1 year. Now, the minister has now indicated that would necessarily also extend the period, and that there were also doubts that it would in any case have been met. Now, if you compare the three standards, Brazilian and the European and the Japanese standards, how will you determine what investment in terms of millions of rand in equipment, etc., has already been made? Because that would be one of the most critical elements why it would be arguable that you cannot move into a period and a rollout, signal this out into the industry, and the next moment you start to reinvent the wheel again. And that is the concern that I have. South Africans are just so often impressed with new technologies here and there and there, and we do not take into account the investments made by industry in a rollout, and then we say, no, but this is better for developmental needs. Can we please understand, what do you refer to when you say developmental needs? Because as far as we are concerned, it is critical that we do not waste resources in South Africa, that we make sure that when we adopt a specific rollout, we stick to our guns and that we focus on that. And certainly, if the European standards develop the second generation or whatever, let us make sure, because those technologies would then be sort of converted to adopt the new generation standards, etc. But now, why do we go back to ground zero on this matter? Why do we even consider it? I don't think it's good for the industry. I don't think it's good for South African economy. On account of beautiful presentations, visits to countries, etc. And one can also question, Minister, through the chair, one could also question to say, what new has really happened that impressed a delegation to such an extent that you are prepared to just cancel the approach that you've had, that this department has had in the past couple of years? So from this side, I would really like to say to the Minister, you will have to come up with very, very sound arguments. Otherwise, it would be regarded as there would be possibility to say, rather I should not say it. Chairperson, it would raise so many questions. That I believe that that we should be very solid in the approach and not allow certain sort of new standards just cancel everything out. We should make sure that we benefit the people, but that we also accommodate what is important for the industry to play a role so that we can have set-up boxes for people who cannot afford them. And if this would mean that they would be more expensive, clearly that would not suit the developmental needs of the country. Thank you, Jim.
Thanks. Well, in the first place, I didn't say that it will necessarily extend. I said it will possibly extend the date, the switch off to the right. But I indicated that there are many other things that can do so. And in fact, I have heard many people say that that date is not achievable, especially from, I won't say from where. Now, we have to be given an opportunity as a country. We can't deny ourselves an opportunity as a country to investigate the best possible option. And I indicated that once we do so, we will consider everything, including investments that have been made, on a cost-benefit analysis, on a cost-benefit basis. We will consider all those things, all the things that you're talking about. I think I'm repeating it for the third time now. This is, and I'm repeating it for the second time, that the DVB-T standard is different from the DVB-T2 standard. So that even when you adopt the DVB-T2 standard, you have to do the things that you have to do with the ISDB-T standard. So I don't see what the love story is with something that was said, when it is in fact a different standard. It's just a development, it's a different standard. And I said that we are not adopting any particular standard. We are just giving ourselves an opportunity to carry out a thorough review so that we can see for ourselves what is best for us, taking into account all the things that you yourself have said. There are investments that, you know, I said that government, Sentech, is the biggest investor. So we would have to justify why we leave. That's what I said in my presentation. That we'll have to justify why we are leaving, why we are doing this. And I indicated in the presentation that there are inputs that say that, in fact, you're not jettisoning that infrastructure. That all you need is software. To be able to, which you would in any event also need for the ISDBT2 software, using on that same infrastructure for ISDBT software in order to. So both, whether you adopt DVB-T2 or ISDBT, you would have, it's just a question of software. You're not going to be required to change the whole mast.
that you have invested, the whole infrastructure that you have invested in. And in any, there are other technologies as well, other standards as well. There's a Chinese standard, there's a Korean standard. So, but then that's beside the point, because there are other people who are adopting other standards. We are only asking these people to look at the best standard that we can adopt, taking into account our socio-economic conditions and everything else. So that we cannot say because 2 years ago, or 3 years ago, or 4 years ago, we decided on a certain standard. And when we realize that we have got, there are standards which have got better advantages, technologically, economically, and so on and so forth, and price-wise. And this thing, somebody asked the question of a price, that they'd heard that the price of this thing is, it's not correct. Because in the presentations there, people indicated very lower prices than the DVB-T's standard prices of the set-top boxes. There are different set-top boxes of different kinds that the Japanese standard of, and some of them very, very cheap. Very, very cheap. So I think that all we are saying to the portfolio committee is that we are going to come back. We are going to go back to cabinet to say we are investigating whether we cannot look at another standard. We are not adopting any other standard now. We are investigating. And what is wrong with that? Of course there will be people here, there will be interests who will come to me, who will come to you, who will go, you know, to say that, you know, don't do that. Because they have invested, some of them, without necessarily any mandate. Just thought that these things are going to turn out this way. And began to do things assuming that. And as I said, whatever we do, we have got to take into account as well what industry, our own industry, because we are responsible for that industry, we are responsible as well for ensuring that we enable the environment, create an enabling environment for them to operate. And therefore we should not do things in a way that disadvantages them needlessly. I indicated that this is one of the considerations we have got to make as we take this decision. But we have got a right and we have got an obligation to our people, to in the ultimate end, the consumer. That's why I like this question about the price. To the consumer. And we're going to, as government, we're going to be subsidizing these set-top boxes. We're going to be subsidizing things. So the more expensive the standard we're going to get for ourselves, the more government is going to have to contribute on this subsidy. And there is no way we want to take such a decision. I think we're agreed, but perhaps we're seeing things. We're talking at cross purposes. Thanks.
Mutambi, and then Master.
Thank you, Chair. Acknowledging and appreciating the work done thus far, yet we are mindful of the challenges. Government Gazette 31408, the digital migration policy, it had put targets to say by 2008, 50% will have access to national broadcasting, digital signal coverage. It said 80% by 2010 and then close to 100% by 2011. Realizing all these shortcomings and challenges that are in place, can the department take us on board now on the current figures to say this is how far we have achieved thus far? That's my first question. The second one is in relation to the provision of an open window for community television broadcasting. It said ICASA will have to provide the necessary regulation and guidelines. Through you, Chair, I would like to request ICASA, as they will be making their presentation, to take us on board on how far have they gone with regard to the regulations. The last one, Chairperson, is with regard to the establishment of the digital content generator hubs. It said the local content conference was hosted on the 6th to the 7th of May. One would like to know with regard to the timeline and the time frame with relation to the establishment of the contract generation hubs in the provinces and in the rural areas. Thank you, Chair.
Now, I think, yeah, there's an overlap for the next briefing, but if there's anything that you want to say, Minister, or the officials, is fine. Otherwise, we can leave it for the next presentation.
I can say, although I'm not, I don't have the figures in my, fingertips, I can say that we are well on our way to achieving those targets that were in relation to the coverage, the signal coverage. The thing is, the problem really is how, is not the capacity of CENTEC with respect to expanding coverage. Is how long it's going to take us on the dual illumination phase, because there's got cost implications, serious cost implications. The more we extend to the right, the more it's going to cost the country, because CENTEC will then have to be funded for that dual illumination, an extended dual illumination period.
We'll hold those questions. There was a last question here, Ms. Tori.
I don't know whether it's relevant to you what you have just asked for, Chairperson. You said it's the last question. Mine won't be questions as such. Maybe I should say, firstly, I would want to commend the Minister for, as he has stated before, that he's giving us a comprehensive report, commending for really coming to us to define exactly what happened in Geneva. When the IRRC made that resolution, because in most cases you find that ministers just come to Parliament for ratification. And I think I have to comment him on that part, because we do understand now what transpired and why we have to ratify. And I hope that will be done very soon, and so that Parliament should consider to ratify this resolution. And I also agree that as a country, South Africa, it's maybe quite correct for us to evaluate exactly what would work for us, you know, as a country, in terms of what the Minister was just saying here about the standards. As South Africa, as a region also, as Region 1, I think it's quite correct for us to evaluate which standard we'll be using relating to the socio-economy of this country. I think I agree on that. And about the digital Zonga that has just been launched, and I wanted to know exactly, I've heard the minister stating the instruments that they are using for information dissemination, and I am concerned whether that is working for us, especially the people on the ground. Because what I've discovered as a MP trying to explain to people what really is entailed in the whole digital device, and I've just discovered that people are not well informed at what is going to transpire when the analog signal will be switched off. I wonder if the people really are informed, you know, to a certain extent, that even the ordinary person on the street would understand what is going to happen. I appreciate what the minister has said and what the information has been given to us on this document. I just wanted to understand what instruments are they using. Is it the GCIS? Is it the information on television, as he has said? And
what other thing could be used? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
What I know is that, of course, I think I agree with the honourable member that we are not where we want to be with respect to the public awareness campaign. And one of the reasons is that a new digital zone is being established, and it will, among other things, USASA is also engaged in this public awareness campaign, or should be. But I will leave it to him to give more details. But
thank you, Minister. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Member Mastori. I think the issue of the zone should be viewed in its context and totality, as Minister was saying. The issue of public awareness has been one of their core mandates, which when we discussed on the issues of the review of the zone, was one of the things that was also considered as fundamental, because we have not been seeing anything on any kumbis that we are meeting on the passes or the stations around issues of awareness. Having said so, there had been some issues with the company that was awarded a tender to work on the awareness. So even if we had not had the discussion that we are having on the review of the standards or discussion around the review of the standard, we still have a problem with the issues of awareness. So the issue of then using the television, print, and media, and computer radio, and online solutions, and other in-store post offices, and even video. If you go around South Africa, you won't even find a single billboard on the zone, neither at the airport or the freeway or anywhere else. So it means we still have a lot to do, even if we carry on with whatever we want to carry on with currently. As it will have a challenge of public awareness. That's the reason why we're beginning to engage the local content summit. We're beginning to engage community TV summit and community radio summit, so that we begin to make them aware and prepare them thoroughly on the kind of nature of work that we have to do, deal with. We also have to have a media summit on digital migration, quite frankly, so that they then journalists report comprehensively on what is needed, factual on what is needed. And we'll have to have a number of other engagements with retailers instead of not dumping flat screen TVs under the guise that they are the ones that are going to be used for community TV. So there's a mammoth of other things that have to be done. We have done some bits, but the zone itself, as it stands, will have to be beefed up to cover those. And the government departments, and all agencies of government, post offices, clinics, health centers, all the other police stations would have to have posters that relate to understanding of issues of migration, much as we have done it with 2010. And if you remember this country, we've done a similar campaign on Y2K, if you remember very well, Y2K compliance. We need a similar kind of campaign to make everyone aware on the digital migration issues. So it's a very massive campaign. It doesn't affect only an innocent center, but it affects families, households, and individuals in those families. So there is work that is being done. We acknowledge the gap, as Minister has been saying, and that's precisely the reason, one of the reasons why we had to review the genre in its nature as it is, so that we are able to address the mass-based approach to our needs.
Mr. Kulwani, have you got one more question?
Not a question, but I just wanted to Honourable Dili raised an issue where we didn't respond deliberately. We think we responded at the end after all presentation has been made, the issue of the internal process. So we prefer
we'll come back to that.
If we deal with late, not now.
Yeah. Okay, so I must thank you very much. I'm told that there's a fresh round of tea and coffee. If we take the ICASA break, we're going to have cold tea and coffee. So I suggest we break for 10 minutes, just quickly grab something, then we'll come back for ICASA. Thank you very much, Minister. Thank you. Our next presentation is by ICASA. A very warm welcome to Mr. Peres Mashile and Councillor Nkuna Tombela, two councillors here, I think. Am I right? Welcome to you and the team. We've got up to 45 minutes for the presentation and the questions and answers. We're running out of time now. I think we were very liberal with the ministry and the department, but I think it was an important issue to get all the clarity, etc. Because many of the issues that are being raised are actually policy matters. And you need to give the executive that opportunity to clarify what the policy position is. But I'm not going to be so generous with the cast. I'm going to be a bit tighter with the time. So, Mr. Shelley, over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, members of the Portfolio Committee of Communications, and the members at large, the Japanese delegation that are here with us, the industry members, and clearly the media as well, because this has become a thing of interest countrywide. I just would like to say that from our side, we'll just explain what we have done from the onset of the requirement for us to get onto the digital environment as espoused by the Act. We did what the Act required us to do in our preparation for this digital migration, but we also like to point out that we have interfaced with many countries, especially Region 1 in this particular regard, under the edifice of auspices of the ITU, Region 1, which includes Africa, the Middle East, and Europe. And on that basis, we were able to move forward under the Geneva 06 radio conference. And it is in that kind of framework that we did what we had to do, taking into consideration anything that pertains to the technological advances, socio-political objectives, and what the regulator has got to do, as the regulator is the hub in making sure that we create seamlessness in providing what in the final analysis will be of benefit to the country. But without much ado, I will just ask Councillor Nguna to make the formal presentation, and from there we will be able to respond to any other questions that would need any clarification. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, honorable members, thanks for this opportunity to make this presentation. We believe that it's long overdue that the Parliament shows active interest on this matter, given its socio-economic significance. I need to assure you that we are going to make a very short presentation, so we'll make the best use of the 45 minutes. Chairperson, just by way of introduction, I think it's important to sketch the current television landscape in South Africa. We have 14 licensed television services in South Africa. Three are national services that are operated by the SABC, that is the SABC 1, 2, and 3. We have one national commercial free-to-air service, that is ETV. And on the pay market, we have the following services: Mnet, MultiChoice, On Digital Media, Super 5 Media, Wow TV, and ESAT. I need to indicate that as for now, Super 5 Media, WOW, and ESAT are not yet operational, but they have been licensed to operate. And in terms of community broadcasting, we have Trinity TV in the Eastern Cape, Cape Town TV, Bay TV in KZN, Tshwane and Soweto TV. All public television services, ETV, Mnet, and Community TV, use analog frequencies, while commercial paid television services, with the exception of Mnet, use digital satellite and cable technology. So, although Mnet is a commercial paid television service, it uses analog frequencies. Now, having sketched that picture, it is important at the outset to say that we currently do not have enough frequencies to accommodate the introduction of new community television services, public and regional service, public regional services, and the opening of competition in the pre-market space. That is where ETV is operating. The authority recently received two applications, one from the Eastern Cape and another from Northwest, for community television services. And as indicated, we do not have enough analog frequencies to accommodate the existing demand. Yet the authority is committed to facilitate the development of the three-tier broadcasting system, which includes public, community, and commercial services. Now, given that in environment, the big question is, how will digital migration assist the situation? Now, broadcasting digital migration offers an opportunity to create additional opportunities for new services to be provided. The uptake of digital technology will free more spectrum currently occupied by the existing services to accommodate rising demands. The release of the spectrum will also be utilized to accommodate digital radio, high definition TV, and broadband services. Now, to summarize this point, what this means is that the spectrum that you currently use for one television service can be used for more than 8 television services. So in analog, it's one channel, but when you go to digital, it's going to be more than 8, depending on the compression technology that you use. And in South Africa, we've decided to use MPEG-4, which will allow for that increase. Similarly, the same capacity that is used for one channel, one television channel, can carry over 50 radio stations in the same channel that was used for one television service. As stated, part of the spectrum will be used to provide broadband services. So while this spectrum that we're talking about, the analog spectrum, is currently used for television services, when it is released, it will be used for television, for radio, as well as broadband services. And talking about broadband services, this spectrum is highly in demand because it's below what we're currently using, like GSM. So to roll it out is more easier and more cost-effective. So it's going to be in demand to roll out broadband services. Now, the authority's approach to digital migration is informed by the following principal objectives: the introduction of quality television viewing, broadening the reach of community and public TV and radio services, and ensuring universal access to broadband services. Now, I just want to go back and explain this slide, which was sent to honorable members. Now, what you see there is what we call the VHF band, which is from 174 to 262. The entire gray area is currently occupied largely by the SABC services, so it is not available. So when you hear us saying to community services that we can't license you, it's because the entire gray area is occupied. With the exception of 12, the red point there, it is currently available. It was freed recently. It was used by the VIP services, VIP protection services. Now it has been freed, but it's not enough to cater for the demand there. So that's what we when we talk about the VHF band, we're talking about, and what is the situation there. Now look what happens after digital migration. You will see that everything is going to be freed. So from 4, 5 up to 13, we're going to free that spectrum. That's what digital migration is all about. And that's when we can introduce a new service system. Now, let's go to the UHF band, which is from 470 to 790. The gray area, again, is fully occupied. MNET is there, ETV is there, SABC3 is there, so it's fully occupied. So when a community radio service approaches the authority for licensing, we will say we do not have a frequency. The only frequencies we have in terms of that presentation, 33 and 35 are the frequencies that we say we will use for digital migration. So while the rest is analog, to move them to digital, we have to move them to 33 and 35. So 33 and 35 have to accommodate everyone who is in the gray area. That is to free the entire gray space. And 54 and 58 are going to be used for mobile television services. And that's the spectrum that we have for mobile television services. Now, 65 and 66 are currently occupied by Neotel, who use a technology called CDMA, which will also provide broadband services. So it's also not available. Only channel 69, as you can see, is available, and it will be used together as part of the digital dividend. So when community services approach the authority for frequencies, we then say to them that we don't have those frequencies until we have migrated everyone from the gray area. And that's when we're going to accommodate community services as well as the competition including the introduction of regional services. Now, having spoken about what digital migration is all about, let's get to the international obligations. The authority's approach to digital migration is informed by our international obligations. And in this particular case, our approach is informed by the Geneva 06 Agreement, which has been entered into by all countries in Region 1 of the International Telecommunications Union, a UN agency for communications. Now, unlike other UN agencies which make recommendations, certain recommendations of the ITU are binding, particularly the radio regulations, bind countries who sign them. Now, the ITU has three regions, that is Region 1, comprising Africa, Europe, and the Middle East, Region 2, the Americas, and Region 3, Asia, and the Pacific. Now, the Geneva Plan that we're talking about excludes all countries in Region 2 and 3, with the exception of the Islamic Republic of Iran, which has signed the agreement. So, non-contracting members are not bound by this agreement. Only those countries in Region 1 that have signed the agreement are bound by it. Now, as already indicated in the DOC presentation, the DOC provides that all contracting members should conclude the migration process by 17 June 2015, 00 GMT. This means that countries that continue to broadcast analog services will not be protected after that date. So your neighbor can interfere with you without being protected. West African countries place a footnote to conclude the migration in the VHF band by 2020. That is the only footnote that was placed by Africans. So in other words, countries in West Africa said that as much as they are committed to the 2015 date, when it comes to the VHF band, they will take more time. Countries are allowed to place a footnote, and West African countries have done so. South Africa only reserves its right to protect its services in case other countries fail to comply with the GOC and the radio regulations of the Union. So in the case of saying that if my neighbor does not comply with the rules of the state, I reserve my rights. That's how far South Africa has placed a reservation. Now, still talking about the international obligations, it is indeed correct to say that contracting members can opt out of the GOC under the following conditions. The first condition is called modification. This means that a particular country will have to re-coordinate with neighboring countries before filing with the ITU. So if we were to change certain assignments in South Africa, we'll have to check with the six neighboring countries, get their permission before we file with the ITU, which it can be a lengthy process. The other process is denunciation, where a country can file its intention to withdraw from the GO6 with the Secretary General of the Union, and it becomes effective after 12 months. So we can say South Africa, we're moving out of the GO6, we're filing with the Secretary of the Union, and it will become effective after 12 months. The other possibility is that the GO6 can only be revised by a competent regional radio conference of all countries in Africa, Europe, the Middle East, and Iran. All countries that have signed can only revise the regional radio conference. And I think you need three over four countries to convene such a regional radio conference. Now, in terms of the roadmap, the policymaker has already indicated the process, but safe to say that in early 2007, Cabinet decided that South Africa would run a three-year dual illumination period, that is from the beginning of November 2008 to the end of November 2011. The working group released its findings, its final report in 2006, which laid the foundation for the ministerial policy, which was gazetted on 7 September 2008. So, in other words, the ministerial policy was gazetted on September 7, 2008, yet we're supposed to have commenced DDT on the 1st of November. In November 2008, broadcasters commenced their trials as it was no longer feasible to commence with public DDT services on the same day as initially announced. Now, the delay in the commencement of DDT in South Africa was due to the following factors. First, the regulations and the frequency plan were not in place on the 1st of November 2008. The technical standards for set-top boxes were still being negotiated. The manufacture and distribution of set-top boxes obviously had not commenced. and the broadcasters were not in a state of readiness as they later on went on a trial. So that's why we didn't start a public DDT on the 1st of November 2008. However, pursuant to the publication of the ministerial policy, the authority started work on the DDT regulations and the frequency plan. This was one of the major achievements of the authority in 2009. We also participated in the development of the set-top boxes in a process that was led by the Bureau of Standards. The regulations, the frequency plan, and the technical standards for set-top boxes are all based on the DBB standard in terms of the DOC, as the DOC indicated. Now, in terms of the content of the DDT regulations, the current regulations provide for the migration of the SABC, ETV, MNET, and Trinity Broadcasting, which are the holders of analog frequencies. So when we talk about these broadcasters, they are not being favored. They are the ones who occupy the gray area that I have pointed to. And until these broadcasters migrate, then we do not have capacity to introduce new services. New channels will, of course, be introduced subject to the public value test to make DDT attractive to viewers, particularly in light of competition from satellite and cable services. I need to indicate the only concept of public value test. I think what we have decided to do as the authorities that when we license new channels in the DDT platform, the public will be involved, so that it will not be the authority and the broadcaster sitting together and agreeing on which services to be entered. Let's say if SABC applies to start a children broadcasting channel, what the authority will do, will invite people, will publish that application and ask for people to participate and also have public hearings, so that South Africans must also say what they want to see on television. So that's what the public value test means. The authority will also introduce competition to MNET and ETV at the end of digital switchover. So the authority is committed to say that after allowing these services to migrate, we will also introduce competition to MNET and also to ETV, because we have to create a competitive landscape. Now, there was a question from Honorable Member regarding community services. Community services will be accommodated in their dedicated DDT frequencies or multiplexes at the end of the migration. So there will be a standalone multiplex, possibly in all in 9 provinces, where community radio, community television services in each province will benefit from the digital dividend. In the short term, however, existing community television services will be accommodated in the analog frequencies until other switchover. This afternoon, we have a meeting with the community television service here in Cape Town to resolve some of the issues related to frequencies. We have also completed a document on the framework for the distribution of the digital dividend, just to have a forward-looking approach, and that has been shared with the department, or is being shared with the department. Very quickly, in terms of the frequency spectrum for DDT, as indicated, the authority finalized the frequency plan in 2009 after 3 sessions of public consultation with all interested parties. The authority decided to stay as close as possible to the GOC to avoid interferences, as the minister indicated, with 6 neighboring countries who are also contracting members to the agreement. Now, while we understand that CENTEC commenced the rollout of DDT even before the GO6, the authority and CENTEC are engaging to look at the investment that CENTEC has put in place and to see how we can still implement the GO6 without compromising national investment. The Department of Communication has convened a meeting for Friday to deal with this matter between ourselves and CENTEC to see, as we move forward, how do we maximize the investments that have already been put in place by the country. So the preliminary discussion in this regard has been ably convened by the department, and we will be participating in that discussion with CENTEC. The DDT regulations also provide for the establishment of the Joint Spectrum Coordinating Committee, comprising all affected broadcasters and their signal distributors, to address teething problems in the process. We envisage that there will be trial and error, and we have convened this as the authority so that all the affected parties play a role there and we are able to preempt the challenges. We will also review the frequency plan on an annual basis to deal with international coordination issues, as well as prevent interference within the Republic with other services like GSM, CDMA, and so forth. So we'll continuously look at the frequency plan to ensure that we limit the cases of interference. Now, in terms of achieving universal access, the rollout of DDT is also based on a three-year scenario as initially conceptualized. Admittedly, we are already halfway to that period as set in the ministerial policy. And when we decided on the target, we scoped the target based on the initial 3 years, and one honorable member cited from the ministerial policy. The target is to achieve 90% coverage by the third year using the terrestrial means. And as the ministerial policy indicates, in areas where it is difficult to provide terrestrial services, that will be complemented by satellite services. So you can use satellite to complement those areas that are difficult. I need to indicate that this 90% also subtracts the Northern Cape. As you know, that the Northern Cape, parts of the Northern Cape have been set aside for the SKA in terms of the other act. So we've taken that into consideration that no terrestrial broadcasting will be provided in that area until after that entire process. And negotiations are ongoing with the broadcasters to find ways to still provide television services to those communities. Well, figures can be revised depending on the availability of funds and the alignment with the rollout of set-top boxes. We believe that having a signal without set-top boxes is not digital migration. The two will have to go hand in hand, and I think the department has spoken at length in terms of that aspect. Now, the issue of set-top boxes has already been dealt with by the department, except that it's safe to say that this process is currently driven by DOT and USASA, and as soon as STBs are available, from our point of view, DDT can commence. While the authority has not changed government timeframes, it is evident that DDT can only commence once set-top boxes are available. And I think this is a crux in anticipation of a question of when are you going to start? The start of migration should go hand in hand with the availability of the signal as well as set-top boxes. So as soon as all those processes related to set-top boxes are in place, then we can commence with the migration. So having a signal but there are no set-top boxes, that will not be migration given the fact that about 5 million or so households will require some subsidy. Now, I've already indicated that in terms of time frame, Chairperson, the authority is ready to facilitate the commencement of DDT as all regulatory ingredients are in place. And to ensure a coordinated drive, we participate in a stakeholder forum convened by the Department of Communications to ensure that we are able to treat each other. The authority has not evaluated how the renewed discussion on standards led by the department will impact on the DDT process. Whenever there is a policy review, we normally get a signal from the ministry to say that we wish to undertake this review, and once that is done, we then work on our own presentation as we maintain a very formal relations with the Department of Communications. As we have not been party to the public debate, but as soon as we are invited to make our comments, we will be able to do so as is required by the law. Now, in conclusion, Chairperson, I know the honorable members, and I must apologize that you don't have this slide, but it's a sum up of everything that we have presented, which is the activities, deliverables, and the progress. Now, in terms of DDT regulations, that is done. DDT frequency plan, that is done. And as indicated, there will be future reviews of the frequency plan also to address matters raised by Centec. Technical standards for set-top boxes, that is done. Broadcaster state of readiness, from the regulator's point of view, that is done in terms of the DDT trial. And the manufacture and distribution of set-top boxes, that is ongoing, as the department indicated that they are working with USASA to deal with this matter. And in terms of the commencement date, as indicated, as soon as we have set-top boxes, whether the subsidized ones or those of us who are seated here can purchase, then we can say that let's hit the ground running and commence with the distant migration process. So, Chair, as promised, we have saved much more time for lunch.
Thank you very much. Mr. Van der Berg? Ilya? Velma? Susan?
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to thank ICASA. We've heard a lot of presentations from ICASA over the year, and I must say this was a very convincing presentation from ICASA. And in due respect, the Minister is not here. I'm not saying it behind his back. He didn't convince me in his presentation this morning. And if we listen what ICASA already has been done, then I have very, very big doubts in my heart that it is even necessary to review the standards that was adopted in Geneva 2006. If we look at that previous slide, what has been done, for instance, the technical stuff around the set-top boxes. If you move from the European standard to, for instance, to the Japanese-Brazilian standard, I think we will have to reinvent everything from the beginning. So there's a lot of very, very important work done by ICASA, and I just want to make it very clear in this committee that if we change the standard, it will sort of make the work ICASA has been done, make it undone. And I just want to ask, Chairperson, if ICASA can give us an indication if the standard ought to be changed to the Japanese standard, what will happen to the plans of ICASA and which standard they prefer. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. To answer you in more precise, brief and direct terms and be truthful about this, first and foremost, I think let's go from the premise that ICASA operates on a technology-neutral basis. But there is a caveat to this, that we have to work within the confines and the constraints of what governs us. And in this particular regard, with regard to the migration, we are part and parcel to the agreement of GO6. Now, if any technology can come around that can actually operate within the parameters of the GO6 agreement without interfering with other neighboring countries, because the agreement is that we have to have harmonization. And Africa has agreed to that, and to the extent that we have, we cannot renege in that particular respect. We have to interface with neighboring countries that, no, we are deviating from this. It's going to affect neighboring countries, and we cannot willy-nilly, like a bull in a china shop, say, well, that's it. This is what we'll do. Because I think going forward in terms of international relations, there is going to be a question of trust and understanding as to how binding our agreement amongst African countries and all that. So if the ISDB can operate within the framework of the GO6, in terms of the band plan, the area in which ISDP will be operational. You know, we do have channels that are available for our operation right now. Now, it will be something else if they were to move to another band, because then we will have to tell people, neighboring countries, that, sorry, we are in this, we are going to interfere with your operations, etc. And by that means, we will not be protected, and I think the ITU will stomp and say, well, you know, what is the whole thing of agreement? It's true that the ITU makes recommendations, but once there's an agreement, it is binding. Otherwise, that's why other countries put footnotes. And we've indicated that South Africa's reservation was, if anybody deviates from the GO6, they should not interfere with a right to which we have agreed. So, under the circumstances, it will really depend on whether this ISDB, from the point of view of technology neutrality and taking into consideration the constraint, will be applicable.
Can I just ask a question, because I want absolute clarity on this. This ITU, the DOC document talks of a resolution, and you talk of an agreement. Is that the same thing? Because you see, what I want to understand, if you look at the DOC presentation, they say South Africa has not ratified this resolution. And you are saying that the agreement is binding on all countries in that region. Now, I want to understand what's the legal status of these things, because it's an important point to just get absolute clarity for our own record.
The agreement, I mean, all the parties within the Region 1 met, had discussions, and came to an agreement. And on the basis of the agreement, it was resolved that any country that deviates will not be protected. Now, you can say an agreement is a resolution. Maybe it's a question of how you look at it. But you will know that if you deviate in the sense of interfering with other neighboring countries, your services will not be protected. So you can argue and try to find out in what respect are you going to achieve harmonization. And I pointed out there that South Africa said, we are in agreement with the GOC, and any country that deviates from the GO6, we have our right to still preserve. In other words, we're anticipating, as it were, that some other countries may, at a certain future, they said, no, we're moving out. South Africa at that point said, we will reserve our right to ensure that anybody who deviates from this agreement does not violate our right. So in the scheme of things, it's really a matter of saying, this is where we are, this is what we are going to do, and therefore we would not fathom any other person who would interfere with us at that point in time. That was what was agreed. So what I'm stating are the facts. How you interpret them in terms of resolution or agreement would be something else. But in terms of the, it said it's an agreement. So you may ask, well, an agreement is not a resolution or it's synonymous. That's really what it is. And if you have a difference, you have to set up a footnote that I am putting a footnote to say I deviate from what you people are saying. But at the same time, they will say the other countries have got to be protected, as we had demanded at that time that we would need to be protected.
May I ask a follow-up, Chairperson?
Yeah, hold on. Let me just give other hands, because there are quite a few hands. We'll come back. But I also want to ask a follow-up question, but I'll hold. Julie?
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to say, you see, this presentation, I must really say I need to congratulate the God, because this is a very sober, factual presentation. If we look at our status as a country, and we look at the International Telecommunications Union, a body that was established in the 1875 or something like that, I mean, it's really running a very long period. And the only approach there is you fall geographically, South Africa is placed within a specific region. The Middle East, basically Asia and the Pacific, is on page 9 of the ICASA presentation, it's in another region. So how it is understood is that all those countries, and that is also where the GEO6 comes about. They say it so fluently, I will have to practice it. The point of the matter is, Chairperson, if we go back to when this agreement came into play, if we look back at the processes that were followed and that there was a timeline for conclusion, we saw it right at the end, what was still outstanding, I would like to say that I believe it would be grossly irresponsible if we changed around at this stage. And can I also say that it is really disconcerting that the department could give advice that we could do that to the minister. The minister has not been long in this industry. I think they owe a very sober approach to the minister. And if we look at this and the complications it will have for South Africa, I think it is really ill-considered. And I have to say that up front. Chairperson, if we look at the fact that we, whether you call it an agreement or a resolution, clearly it affects 120 countries, by the looks of it. And if we then look at what the advantages could be of the other side, of a Japanese system, it could never benefit South Africa, because if you isolate yourself on a set of standards that are that is not compliant with the region within which you fall, clearly you're looking for serious problems. So I just want to say that it is clear, and I would have actually wanted the minister to have been present in this presentation, because then he could have understood concerns and speculations which I didn't want to venture into. But we know how these lobbyists work. We know that certain benefits often come across when they start their lobbying. As far as generation standards are concerned, nothing has so far been proved that the Japanese standards would benefit South Africa in any way, that the technologies that they would present to us would benefit. So what is it then? What are the powers that they have that they could actually arrest a process that started way back in 2005, went through to a ratification in 2006 at Geneva, and now all of a sudden we want to reinvent the wheel? That just makes it very plain for us to say, what else is influencing this particular decision? Thank you, Jay.
Over a cup of tea, the Japanese are there, you can speak to them. Over a cup of tea, ask them. Because they are here, and they are guests, so we're fine. Ask them that question. But that you can also answer. Chair, is there a point of order?
No, you know, from what from the chairperson's response to the session, because now I'm just checking, Chair, while is the ICASA participating in the debates that are being conducted by the department? Yeah,
the ICASA. ICASA, yeah. She sneaked in a question I was going to give her, all right?
Maybe before ICASA. You see, Chair, maybe let's deal with this matter correctly. The minister is presented at DOC. ICASA is presenting. I unless I'm wrong, I did it. The only thing which I pick up in terms of the agreement was the rectification. But throughout the presentation, it's clear that the South African government, in particular cabinet, has adopted the European standard. There was no disagreement or deviation on that. Even the minister confirmed that. ICASA is making a presentation, is saying there are three possible way out in that agreement. They are naming them, three of them. The minister presents and says, we are engaging in SADC on the matter because we want uniformity on the issue of standards. Based on that process is when maybe you can think of review, because as we talk now, there is only one standard in the country, the one which was adopted by cabinet. There will not be any change. So I'm just saying, maybe we sometimes not understand the issue. So I don't see anything presented by ICASA differing from what the minister said. It's exactly the same thing, because as we talk now, the cabinet decision is the European standard. there's no change. That's what the minister said. They are engaging in a process. As the ICASA presentation says, these are the three possible way out on the agreement and so on. So now I just want to raise that, Chair, because it become an issue that will end up putting ICASA to a situation where it seems to be versus the department or the minister. Whereas what they are presenting is the same for me, as I can read the thing, except the issue of ratification, whether things were ratified and so on. But I think is neither here or there, because cabinet approved the standard and agreed what you are going to run with until you review based on the three options the guests are presented and so on. I think that is important so that we don't continue putting as if we've got two people facing each other who want to wreck it, in terms of who is who, who's doing what, and so on. I think that will be important, so that we move freely and moving forward. So I will ask my question here on my time.
Don't get involved in the political dogfight.
The answer to the question, regulator. Did we participate in the deliberation and discussion with regards to the standards between ourselves, DOC, and the Japanese? Yes, we did. And we did affirm the position of South Africa with regard to the DVB-T standard in that particular regard. And we indicated that, if anything, if you believe that you can come in, as long as you live within the confines of what the arrangements were in terms of the Geneva 06 agreement, in terms of where the band plan, where the spectrum is going to be allocated, in terms of making sure that you don't interfere with other neighboring countries, that there is harmonization, go ahead and make our day. That's really how we put it to them. But clearly, we stated, as much as we're making this presentation, it's a replication of our position. It's almost like the gospel to us. Now, there could be questions about changes, advances in standards, etc. DVB-T2. Is an advance of DVB-T, maybe call it T1. It was called T. Now, because there is an advance, it's called T2. The only difference is an upgrade of, shall I say, compression techniques. You had, I may be just wrong, but this is how I understood it, MPEG-2, which was a compression technique that could at least get 8 channels out of the 8 megahertz bandwidth, which is normally the our analog in terms of broadcasting services, in terms of PAL. Currently, the MPEG-4, which is called Advanced Video Coding, can accommodate at most twice the channels. So it's almost like you buy Mercedes-Benz of 1995 and then the next year, there are changes that are made in the 1996 Mercedes-Benz. So it's an advance. It's not a reinvention of the wheel. You know, it's an upgrade, etc., of compression techniques that you can get now more channels as opposed. There could be DVB-T3 at a later stage. We don't know. Or 4 or 5. But it will just be, you know, upgrades. If I give the sample of a car. You know, you see how cars upgrade from where they started to where they are. A proper understanding of this is to clearly indicate that most of the technologies that pertain to advances are not dissimilar in a grade. There are just nuances of differences. They use coded orthogonal frequency division multiplexing. They use forward error correction. And there is also what you would call single frequency network, wherein you can use low-power transmitters all over the country at distances of 8 kilometers from each other, thus using less power and covering what you call the areas that could be, like, where there are hills, high mountains, etc., and all that. Or you can use look for a high site, a tall tower, and high power. So you can look at the cost-benefit analysis. You know that ESCOM is going to be increasing the cost of electricity by so much, and you can find out, do I need a low-power transmitter that I can deploy all over, or do I need a high site with a tall tower and high power?
So that will be a decision of anybody who would like to deploy the network. But by and large, advances that are made have nuances, small differences of some sort.
Okay, Mr. Kolwani was next.
Hold on.
It was Velma.
Okay.
Velma, Susan, and then Mr. Kolwani. Sorry about that.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want the person to go to back to slide 8. On this slide, I want to ask, DSTV, where is this covered in this spectrum? And then with the digital migration, when it happens, will that have an effect? And those who have then DSTV boxes plus the satellite, will they also need then set up boxes? So it means then they will have then two set up boxes if needed. And then also, maybe I'm thinking ahead of time, those set up boxes, this is only for the current TVs. Will new television sets being manufactured where you do not need set-top boxes? The reason for me asking, in America, they do have captioning boxes, and that happened in the past, and those boxes faded away, and now they do have then a captioning chip built into the television. So I want to know, will we be following that same manner that's being done where we would not need any set-top boxes? Thank you.
Maybe I can start off by picking up some of the questions that I think I'm capable of responding to, and Councillor Nguna will take the rest that are more difficult. Set-top boxes are really analog to digital converter boxes. In its basic form. Because now we're going to digital, a digital signal will be the one that is going to be transmitted. But our receivers are analog. So now we have to have the set-top box that receives that digital signal and converts it into your receiver. And that's how the situation is going to be saved. Now, the digital TVs, in simplest form, they're nothing else but, if I may, a computer. Very much similar to what a computer is. You know, got a monitor, you got the arithmetic logic unit, you got a CPU, and you got other things that are very similar to a computer. And now, one can argue, for instance, if you have a high definition TV, it's already a digital television that will receive the digital signal and work with it and convert it for your view, for your ear to hear, etc., without needing a set-top box. So, in a way, there is no need of it needing, because within itself, it is designed to receive the digital signal and then, of course, be ready for viewing. Now, I need to point out that there is a difference between high-definition TV and standard-definition TV. When you talk about these many channels, it's really about standard definition. High definition TV is frequency hungry. Out of the 8, you could probably get 2. 8 standard definition TV and 2 high definition TV, because high definition is spectrum hungry. Because it's far much more clearer, but it is still digital. The standard definition TV is still digital. So, by and large, I think we hear, let it be clear, when we talk about these many channels, we are really talking about standard definition TV, not high definition. A lot of people not have expectations in that particular regard. So maybe I'll hand over to Councillor Nguna to deal with some of it.
Yeah, Chair, very quickly. I think let's
the pose of the first question that you asked. You see, the issue around ratification, the report that we got from people who attended the GO6 from ICASA, who went with the department, is that South Africa ratified. Now, at the ITU, there is no system of how you do it. So the ITU does not impose on individual countries on how to ratify. Some go to their parliaments, some go to cabinet, some go to ministers, and so forth. The impression that one gets now is that this matter was not ratified by our parliament. Yet, there was a deposit made by the representatives of this country at the ITU. Now, if that is done without having come to parliament, the ITU will not say, why did you go to parliament? Because the ITU does not deal with your internal matter. So whoever goes to the ITU with a signing and say, I'm depositing this document, the ITU accept that document because it doesn't know how your country functions. So as far as the ITU is concerned, it could be that we have deposited, but the matter didn't come to our parliament. And that obviously is a matter for domestic consumption and not so much of the ITU, because they rely on what they are told by representatives of countries. So as far as the report is concerned that we got from our representatives who attended the GO6, is that South Africa has ratified. Whether it went through parliament or not, that is what we need to discuss as South Africans. Now, as the Honorable Member Colony indicates, ICASA is presenting on what exists currently and not what will happen in future. And as indicated, will engage with whatever changes that may happen. And in terms of the issue of DSTV, I indicated on this slide that DSTV uses satellite technology. It does not use terrestrial frequencies. So it's not on terrestrial. But I think the point is, do we envisage of a situation whereby South Africans can have 5 set-top boxes in their own houses? You know, where you have Top TV, DSTV, DDT, WOW, and everything. Certainly not. And as the authority, we are investigating the matter of interoperability of set-top boxes. And, Chair, if it turns out that it can't be done in terms of the law as it currently stands, we may have to defer back to Parliament to say that we are faced with this difficulty, and can Parliament come with whatever innovations to deal with that issue. So the issue of interoperability of set-top boxes is going to be very important. Otherwise, South Africans can end up with 10 set-top boxes, which is clearly not viable. The issue is how part of it is cheaper.
Then?
That's long last. I've been raising my hand, I don't know for how long. And already some members have already taken what I wanted to say, but nevertheless, I'll say whatever I have to. Honorable Chair, you know, after ICASA presented his briefing, I was like surprised why all of a sudden DA and COPE are in love with ICASA. But now I see why. It was to them, they wanted to choose between ICASA and what the minister said. And for us as the ANC, this is not our interest. Our interest is what is best for the South African. That is what we want, nothing else. And in your briefing,
Mr. Chairman, on a point of order, I would appreciate it if the Honourable Member didn't say for us what we think and what we don't think.
And I cannot do that.
Thank you.
I won't do that. And so that is my own assessment. I think I have that right as a person in this meeting to assess whatever I see. And in your presentation, Mr. Mashile, you also said, somebody asked you a question. You said it's just a matter of upgrading. You cannot buy a system that will need to be upgraded. While still in the market, you still have something that is already upgraded. Why do you have to do that? Why do you have to do that? That's what I'm saying to other people. Let me not use these two names. Other people, they have another interest of which we don't have. On your presentation, on the last slide, you gave us a view that everything is done. The last slide that you presented.
And I assume that whatever preparations you were doing were in regard to DVBT. Now, maybe you can tell us what if the investigations are done, the time is right for us to say this is what we want finally, because I think now we are not saying we want this or we don't want that, because there's already an agreement. If finally we change our mind as a country, not the minister, as a country, we change our mind based on the new model that is there and what other countries are using, will this affect your planning or what? Do we have to go back or what will happen? Lastly, Honorable Chair, I'm a little bit confused, Mr. Mashile, in your response. I just want to check, I want to ask you one question. That to you, because you were here when the minister was presenting, do you think the minister's briefing is not in line with the Geneva 06 agreement? Because in some of your things, like you have this feeling, I just want to know, because when I leave this meeting, I know that this is your understanding. Do you think he's not in line of that agreement? He has deviated from that agreement or what? Thank you.
Let me point out that when I talk about DVT...
Sorry for that. Sorry, Chair. Okay. The last issue is the issue of your participation. I'm not sure where, but somewhere you mentioned like we are not part of the processes. I just want to... If I understand that correctly.
Okay, let me point out when I talk about DVB2, it's because of my understanding of it and my knowledge, because I delve into a lot of research and try to understand the technology surrounding this. And I'm saying it openly, plainly, that it is a compression technique in the simplest term. It can compress the signal far much better than MPEG-2. And therefore, you will get more channels. The advantage with DVB-T2, which is MPEG-4, advanced, maybe the word you will tell, advanced video coding, simply means the compression is far much more than it was with DVB-T1, as it was called DVB-T. So I'm just putting in my understanding of what it is from a technical point of view. I beg your pardon? On what? No, I'm just answering all the questions. I think I will explain some of the things that you have more or less related. The question of how the minister elaborated, I think it's very, very clear. Now, I do not see how I have contradicted Eric. Member Eric has indicated that this is just an affirmation in a way where the minister said what is at cabinet is DVB-T and this thing is still undergoing discussion within the region and everybody. So I was just putting the parameters as to within the parameters that there are these constraints that are being, and I think he has also elaborated in a way we were replicating each other in this respect, that this is not a done deal. They are just looking at it from the point of view of how best this could be considered going forward. And the jury is still out in that particular respect. But what stands right now from the country's point of view is DVB-T, until otherwise. Now, in that particular regard, I'm not sure to what extent, unless I can be pointed out in terms of this is what you said as opposed to what the minister said, and therefore that you are opposing the minister. We're working hand in glove with the DOC, and we have robust debate, and we disagree and differ. There's no doubt about that. And our position on this, as I pointed out, we deliberated on this, and we indicated in the same manner as we are giving you this, to the Japanese as well as to the DOC. In other words, under those circumstances, we are not turning cold or something like that. The DOC knows this position, that this is our position. We are not springing a surprise here. They knew all along about our position in this particular regard. So let it not be said that I'm coming here to come and contradict the minister on something that is good for the country, etc. I'm coming here to also get involved in a robust debate and give my understanding. At the end of the day, it is you people who will decide which way to go. But I have to be very, very honest as a professional to say, this is my position. You can choose to disagree with me. And I think the country is based on agreeing to disagree. That is what the democratic principle is. So I would wonder if I have to say, you know what, let me look at where the political wind is tilting and say, no, maybe I don't have to say that. And then later I'm asked, why didn't you advise us when things maybe don't turn out? We had a chairperson of ICASA, this thing was going on, and the chairperson of ICASA did not advise us on this. So at least at the point in time, it is a point of view that is objectively derived. And therefore, it is there for the taking. You can decide, well, you know, we don't agree with what the chairperson is saying, and that's fine. That's fine, you know, but at least from a professional point of view, putting politics aside, I was hired as a professional, and I was trained as a professional, and I'll give my viewpoint as a professional, regardless of anybody who would disagree with me.
Thank you. I think I thought that the Honorable Member Khulwana had dealt with the issue, because we listened also to the Minister speaking, and the Minister said that we have a decision of Cabinet that we are working on, and that there is consideration to undertake a review. So we don't see a contradiction in that, because Minister is the custodian of policy. If Minister changes policy with our participation, then we'll have to implement whatever policy will come into being. As far as we know, the Minister has asked up to now to do what we have been doing. And as soon as the review is concluded and there is a new decision, whichever way, then the authority will have no choice but to implement the new decision of policy. So there is no contradiction between the two processes, as far as I understand it. Chair, with regard to the issue of registration, I was merely saying perhaps for the Department and Parliament to investigate this matter and come to some understanding whether South Africa ratifies or not in whatever way. We, as the authority, are required only by the law to implement international obligations as entered into by the Republic of South Africa. And the day we are told that a particular obligation has not been entered into by the Republic of South Africa, then we will not implement such. But we will suggest that this be clarified between the policymaker and Parliament. And that is the best way, because we do not sign international agreements as the authority. We just implement. Master V, and then Eric, will you be the last?
Chairperson. There's a comment here, 8 before group. I don't know what it's
before. No. You are coming in as a full member.
No, Chairperson, I want us to be clear here. Can you make me understand what is the problem with a country being a signatory of an agreement and a ratification of a protocol by Parliament, which will represent the country? I think we don't understand the two, because I think it is quite clear on this document of the DOC, as the Minister and the DTG has explained to us. This is a presentation. This is a briefing, Chairperson. This is not a workshop for us. And I think we are turning this thing into a workshop, and we must be told, you know, personal. I don't think it's just correct, Chairperson. Can you please assist us? Because partly I think we are being even attacked by the Chairperson of ICASA.
Look, I think the matter is quite clear. There are certain international protocols that have to be ratified by our Parliament. And we've seen quite a few of them. They are discussed in the various portfolio committees, they are approved, and they are brought to the House, the matter is reported on, and then the Parliament accedes to those protocols and approves it as country policy. What is becoming quite clear here is that such a document has not been presented to this Parliament. Now, whether the ITU
agreement is equivalent to a protocol, it requires parliamentary ratification. We don't know. We will have to get clarity on that. But what has been stated, that the agreement is binding on countries, that after discussion and consideration, if they agree on that, that agreement is binding on a country. But as has been pointed out in the ICASA document, provisions are there for modification of that, or a denunciation of that, or a review of the policy. So that is, I think, what the department and the ministry is undertaking. They are applying the review mechanism, not on their own, but together with SADC countries. And we are given, ministers informed us that review process will be taking 2 months, after which the SADC ministers will meet and take a decision one way or the other. So that's how I understand it. And I think what Mr. Nkuna has been suggesting is that if we want further clarity on the status of this agreement, we should really get it from the department. Because as ICASA, they don't deal with those matters. I don't know if that clarifies the issue. Okay. Mr. Kulwani?
Thanks. Maybe a couple of questions. I will avoid the issue of going in a long discussion. But one issue which I just picked up was the issue between the regulator and Centec on the rollout of infrastructure. But I'm sure Mr. Nkuna indicated that they are meeting Friday to deal with that matter. But I hope Friday will resolve the matter. I think it's been breaking for so long. If Friday is just another meeting for other further postponement of decision, then I think that is also not helping. It should be a meeting with SIG to take a decision around that particular matter, how to move forward. The second issue, Chair, is around the... You know, Chair, I don't understand. I'll make an example with the regulator. That on daily basis, they're working with regulations. And when Mr. Nkuna was presenting the last slide, he was talking about regulations which will be reviewed. Now it means you see the issue of reviewers. You cannot divorce it from the normal processes of nature. Things they do or they are being reviewed from time to time. That's how I will take the decision or the way the department is talking about review in the context that things are reviewed anyway. I don't know how many times if you buy your TV or your furniture, changing it from time to time because another one is coming. Now this was a flat screen TV, people are having flat screen TV, no longer the long one and so on. So we do it every time, except that this one seems to be having the cost implication with the minister. Which the minister said they will take that into consideration and so on. I think my view would be that the issue of reviewers, maybe what we need to do, because clearly, for me, the issue of reviewers is a political matter and political choices. It's not the issue, it's not the operational matter which some of the institutions that come here are coming to present. It's a political matter in terms of choices, what do you do, where do you want to go, and so on. So, as political parties, we must start to battle that political, not in terms of operational, because it won't help. We should be able to argue political, why do we want to do those things, because the political choice of the policy matter, which is informed by the politics, social politics of a particular country, and so on. Because I was going to argue to say, if that was not an issue, you'll see that other countries, what they've done, they just came up with specification and allowed the industry to roll out set-top boxes without following through. But because of our own circumstances in the country, we had to specify and make sure that we babysit the whole process so that our broader community, people in the South Africa, they're able to benefit us. So, If you follow through the process and read it correct, what happened in other countries, you will see that each and every country is taking a policy decision and a conscious decision how to want to move forward. So it's a political matter. Let us engage political. We will engage political say on that matter of the choices and so on. But for now, let us
focus on the operational matters based on the approved standard by cabinet. Until something else comes, which we don't know whether it will come, it's not going to come, and so on. The last question, Chair, this one was not the question, Chair. The first one was the question. The last issue, Chair, which I wanted to ask with ICASA was, when I asked the minister about whether we can, are going to meet the 2011 November, he said, I must ask you when you were here. So I'll pass that question to you. Well, see, that's what the minister said. The standards will have impact, but it has a test place. You are dealing with these things. So it's your turn. Can you tell me on that question? Thanks.
Okay. Let me answer it in this manner. Remember, the digital migration period was supposed to start in November 2008 and have a duration of 3 years. Number one, that dual illumination period had to be preceded by tests and evaluations, prototyping, seeing that this thing works. Now, that period is still going on as we're talking right now. We haven't even started with dual illumination to start with because set-top boxes are not available. The only time there will be dual illumination is when set-tops are, because you will be issuing out a digital signal and a set-top will be there to capture that. Now, that in itself tells you, notwithstanding the time period that was set, the blocks were not in place, but there should be a period of testing evaluation. Then you get dual illumination, which will then require set-top boxes. Because you can imagine when you switch off at 2011, how many people who have analog TV will be able to see everything on the screen if they don't have set-top boxes? That is the danger, and it has got social, economic, political consequences. Because you would just face a blank screen and you wonder, where's my SABC and new generation and all kinds of things. So we are saying, on the availability of set-top boxes, which could have been spread far and wide to a larger population, then you can switch off. Because it makes practical sense to make sure that those who were able to watch TV during the analog era will still be able to watch the TV. We don't want the situation to say, okay, that was the analog era, sorry, you don't have a set-top box, therefore, we've switched off your analog. It could be disastrous in that way. So, in a way, we are trying to accommodate the practicalities of this by saying, we have to make sure that all of the people who are watching TV analog, or the majority of them, you can talk in terms of percentages, will be able to watch television. Because right now, the cost of a digital television, minimally right now, Councillor Nkuna mentioned 5,000 rands. Now that in itself is not coming easy for most of the people in South Africa, as you know, they're going through hard times economically, etc. and all that. So I would say in a nutshell that the dual elimination period has to start. And it's going to take a while unless the majority of the people have got set-top boxes. Now, let me point out that even the United States, they had a set date. By that time, they realized the consequences of ever switching off. Obama was more concerned that, his mileage, political mileage, is just going to dip down. He allowed for an extension. Even the Brazilians are thinking of 2016, even though they had started far much earlier. Which year was that? They still believe they are not ready yet until 2016. Now we are starting it in 2008 and want to switch off 2011. So we're just putting the practicalities. As I said, our role is really to advise in a manner that is pragmatic, provide all the because that's what we were hired for, to provide all the knowledge and understanding that we have, the practicalities of it, etc. If the choice is to switch off 2011, I just want you to look at the consequences.
and find out whether you can live with the consequences. That's really what it is. But there is a way out by saying that as soon as the top box is available to a larger population, then we can consider switching off. Thank you.
I want to make this the last. I just want to put in a question. Let's assume that after this SADC investigation is done and a decision is taken by this government to change the policy. Practically, in terms of you now preparing new regulations, what is the time frame? Because that question was put to the minister and he said it will be a few months. What is your sense of your time frame for new regulations?
I would say that it depends on the material aspect of the current regulation as to whether they cannot be adapted accordingly. I'm sure they're not going to throw out the baby with the bathwater. It will really be a matter of looking at the material things that have to change. And that in itself could, to a certain extent, take maybe at most half a year, 6 months.
I wanted to quickly deal with the issue of the Centec. I think we indicated on slide 17 that we are committed to look into matters pertaining to the current investment, infrastructure investment. However, we'll have to do that in the context of also protecting our neighbors. So that discussion is going to take place, and when necessary, we may need to talk to certain countries if they are not going to be affected by that decision that we take, so that we don't only look at the interests of South Africa, but also with the neighboring countries. Lastly, in terms of the issues of time frames, we also indicated that the DOC convenes a state of readiness meetings that we attend as the authority. And that's where USASA, Centec, SABC also get to present their state of readiness. And I think out of that engagement, we'll be able to come with a comprehensive presentation on time frames, because they affect all these different parties. And I think those kind of engagements with the department and other stakeholders will allow us to synthesize the issue of time frames, and we can make a comprehensive submission in that regard. Right. Thank you very much, Ikasa, for the presentation. We're going to call upon the SABC to come in now. Members, we are running out of time. I just need your advice. There is no budget for lunch and no provision has been made for lunch. So I don't know how we want to proceed. There's also a sitting of the House this afternoon, and I think there's a debate in which the Deputy President is speaking at about 2:40 after the member statement. So can I be guided how we want to move forward, because we've still got two presentations. Can we carry on? I want to carry on, but then I'm worried about people like Mastrovi, etc., who might want to have something to eat because they're diabetic. And now I'm asking for guidance, because we were supposed to finish at about 1:15, 1:00. But we are not going to finish at that time, so I need your guidance. Can I stretch it to 1:30? If we can't make it, then we might have to come back at 2:00 and sit till 2:30, then we can go to the house. Is it okay? Because there are also one or two other matters that we have to finalize as a committee now.
While my colleague is setting up, Chairperson, thank you very much for the opportunity, Chair, honourable members and colleagues from the sector. As we sit here, Chairperson, the other colleagues are at the Committee on Sports presenting our state of readiness. We are happy to inform you that what they are telling them there is that we are ready to make the country proud, to bring together the power of television and radio to broadcast all 64 games through our 18 radio stations, 3 television stations in 11 languages from the 11th of June to the 11th of July. But back to the matters of the day. With me, I have Yusuf Nabi on my right, who is a manager who is driving our digital project, and on my left, it's Zweli Mthembu, who is the executive in the CEO's office, and my name is Phumelele Nzimande. We are mindful of the pleas of health issues, so we won't stand between honourable members' lunch and the presentation in Parliament. Just to say that as SABC, we've really been committed in an active participant of a partner in the digital process. Over the past 2 years, we've done quite a lot of planning, been involved in testing, and also in interacting with the rest of the broadcasting sector internationally, which is very organized, as you know, Chairperson. And what we're going to be sharing with you here is our lessons based on these experiences of the past 2 years. And as the Minister shared his perspective earlier, we will also be very happy to participate in the process of the review and learn our valuable lessons that we've learned in that process of review. So without much further ado, I would like to hand over very quickly to my colleague Yusuf to make sure that we just take you through that. We seem to be having a bit of a problem connecting, and everybody has hard copies, I believe. We can start talking to those while we're waiting for the screen to come on. Yusuf?
Thank you. Chair, honourable members, I'm going to try and go through some of the issues quite quickly because I think some of them have been covered in some of the debates. I just want to start by going back to what are some of the success factors that are really important to put in place for a migration to occur. And this we're looking at mostly from a consumer point of view, because I think in all the discussion we must not forget that at the end of the day there are these citizens out in the country who need to be able to participate in this process and make the migration with us. And we identified 5 success factors that need to be in place to entice consumers to make this migration. More channels, an affordable set-top box, good education and marketing, customer support, and good coverage. And the implications of these really means that many role players need to do different things along the way to be able to make this happen. This includes having new channels licensed or development of new channels, a low price set-top box, possible subsidy schemes and customer support schemes, a very good marketing campaign, coordinated activities, and of course a quick rollout period is ideal because then the costs are less. And it's important for us to remember that these success factors are important as well. In addition to the technology and other issues that have to be put in place. It's also important to note that with a migration process of this nature, there are an immense amount of activities that need to be coordinated across the value chain to be able to make this successful. There's content issues, broadcast infrastructure issues, network issues, set-top boxes, aerials. There are many areas of the value chain that need to be considered in making this migration. And throughout this migration needs to be supported by extensive customer support because consumers are effectively being asked to be able to take new technology into their homes to keep receiving pretty much the same services that they do now. important to note that in this process, not everything needs to be changed to digital. So, for example, the content can still be broadcast in analog, the playout facilities, the broadcaster can still be in analog, but there are areas that are affected, such as multiplexing facilities that need to be put in place, the network needs to be replaced, which is what Centex has been doing, set-top boxes need to be put in people's homes, some aerials may have to be replaced, and for all intents and purposes, people should be able to use their existing TVs, but later on, things like IDTVs or integrated television sets will come into play. So we need to consider all these aspects of the value chain, and if one part of the value chain is broken, the process cannot be completed or cannot be successful. From our point of view, we've always looked at the migration as taking place in three different phases. The first phase really being a piloting phase, a phase where we can test, start rolling out the network, test the network, get feedback, refine the process, refine the network, refine the technology, and evaluate to make sure that everything is ready to take it to the consumer. And of course, during that process, we can complete regulatory processes as well. And this includes things such as set-top box specifications, rules of operations that govern the way broadcasters would operate, and setting up the operations to be able to continue sustaining this process. From there, we need to make it to phase two, which is when we really start putting the services into the market and making it available to the public. Expanding the transmitter network to full coverage, so in other words, we don't have to have full coverage at the start, but over the process of phase two, we will expand that network. And that's really the period of dual illumination, where the analog and digital networks run in parallel. And then at some point, we need to make the leap into phase three, which is really when you start switching off the analog network to have permanent digital services only. And that, we believe, needs to happen a phased approach, transmitter by transmitter, area by area, based on certain criteria that need to take into account that consumers need to have a seamless migration as well. And that's where you start looking at planning for digital dividend. And in most cases, as per international experience, this is when the mass market takes up the service. In terms of the policy timelines, as we understood them, the switch on of services would occur in November 2008. We are now at the point where we believe we're ending the pilot phase based on the policies that we had seen and the decisions that had been taken. And then we had, as per the policy, there was intended to be a switch-off in 2011. Now, we've interpreted that as the beginning of the switch-off period because it has to be a phased period. And I'll touch on this a little bit later in more detail. And then, of course, there's deadlines of the ITU, which is suggesting a complete switch-off by 2015 to make sure you still have protection. Or even, I think, there's a static agreement that talks about a date about 2013 as well. So these are dates that we need to work towards to try and complete the process. So what has the SCVC done up until now? We've made a fair amount of progress through the first phase with an SCVC-led DTT pilot project. So we're focusing on that first phase that I've spoken about. We have to get through the testing and the piloting phases first. We need to make sure that these services are ready for the public before we roll out mass to the public. During this process, we achieved 33% coverage of the population. We ran the service in Johannesburg, Pretoria, and Durban. 10 channels, 19 radio stations, and limited semi-interactive services. So we ran services such as EPGs, basic applications, which is things like games and type of semi-interactive services where you can use your remote control to interact with certain information on the screen. It did require the participation of broadcasters, signal distributors, set-top box manufacturers, regulators, research companies, support. So we tried to simulate the process as much as possible as it would be if we had to launch it to the public and incorporate all the different parties that need to be involved in making sure we have a successful rollout. To date, we have spent in excess of 80 million rand on this on the DTT process, of which the bulk of it has been on the pilot. As of the end of March 2010, we have scaled down our investment at this point as we near the end of the pilot. And this includes content cost, technology cost, and the like that would have been involved in setting up the pilot. We have had just under 3,000 active participants. It's a closed user group, of which 1,500 were a research-based panel. So it was a panel selected based on demographic representation in the areas we are piloting. And the balance was really given out to stakeholders that would be involved in the process. But the focus of our research has really been on those 1,500. And one of the big things that we have learned is that this is a significantly complex process. It has proved to be more complex than we originally thought. And we have learned some very valuable insights, not just on research, but also in terms of some of the things that need to be in place to be able to make this successful. Some of the key lessons that we've learned, the consumer does see benefits in the DTD process. They see the better quality, they see the better picture, they see the better sound. We do have opportunities to offer more content, more public service content, particularly from the SABC's perspective, more choice in terms of free-to-air channels, and you can do additional services such as information services and e-government type services. Obviously, that is dependent on what we define them at various points in time, but they are possible. We have learned that it's an extremely complex process to roll out. There's a lot of coordination and monitoring required, and it requires time and a very clear plan, because you are talking about a very structured process that needs to make this successful. And it is an expensive process. Customer support cannot be underestimated. The investment from broadcasters is quite substantial to be able to facilitate the migration. And it will take time before broadcasters like the SABC can generate a real return on investment through this process, because it's only at the point at which dual illumination is complete that we start seeing the real financial benefits, so to speak, that come after. What have we learned in terms of consumer feedback? Well, the attitude towards the technology is extremely positive. 87.2% of the trialers stated that it was definitely worth the effort to install the set-top box. So this is definitely something that consumers can benefit from. We have established, based on this technology specification that we had used for the trial, that the technology does work. We use MHEG-5 middleware, DVB-T standard, MPEG-4 for the SAC with DTT requirements. So this is based on the agreed decisions already at that time. We do have the intellectual property in South Africa to manufacture and design set-top boxes, so we use two local manufacturers in our pilot project. Interoperability between free-to-air and pay TV was tested successfully and does work, so the SABC services were available on the parallel MNET pilot. Access services on DTT is an essential service for persons living with disabilities. It is a specific piece of research around the disabled community, specifically hard of hearing, and we have found that the access services that Digital does provide for are essential to making more accessibility for people with disabilities. Network redundancy, false monitoring, vital for the DTT network. There's a lot of additional work that comes in potentially with the Digital network because it's very unforgiving. And accurate coverage predictions are essential. So when we're establishing that people who have the service currently need to also have a Digital service, the coverage predictions are quite important. So going back to that phasing process, if we're now at the end of the pilot, what needs to happen before we can move to phase two? Well, in our view, we need to have at least 56% coverage minimum. New channels need to be launched. The set-top boxes must be available in retail. And it does not necessarily require the subsidy to be in place, although it would be great to have it in place, but this process can't start without the subsidy being in place. It just can't finish without the subsidy. And for us to be able to do that, we need to have licenses, funding issues need to be sorted out, clear rollout plans, customer support. All those areas that I've highlighted that are important for a critical for success of this process need to be put in place. Taking into account where we are today, and I'm highlighting the best possible scenario here, we believe the earliest possible public launch is March 2011. That's assuming that as of today, March 2011. And that's assuming that as of today, we are able to start putting all these processes in place. So I do stress that it is the best possible scenario in our view. And that really is, once we get licenses from a broadcasting point of view, we need to make sure the set-top boxes are in place that are conformant. So in other words, consumers can receive all the services the way we'd like them to receive them. And that one box doesn't fall over when we do something or we introduce a new channel or something like that. And then we need a period of about 6 months to be able to get to air at minimum. So as of today, we believe you're looking at an earliest public launch of March 2011, assuming everything goes from today. Then to move to phase three, which is the switch-off phase, there's a number of other things that need to be in place. Firstly, coverage needs to be expanded to a fair amount of the population. We believe it should be a minimum of 80%. You need to have significant penetration in each area that is being switched off. So if we are switching off the transmitter in Cape Town, we need to make sure that all the people who are receiving from that area actually have a set-top box in their home. Because as soon as that analog transmitter is switched off, no services are available unless you have the digital set-top box. And then, of course, subsidized set-top boxes, health schemes, etc., to make sure everybody can make this move need to be in place. And that really requires us to have a significant amount of funding. I think it's a critical issue here. We estimate it's going to be in the region of about three billion rand if you take into account the subsidy scheme, which I think has already been estimated at 2.5 billion rand, plus the marketing efforts and everything else that needs to go behind it. There's a fair amount of funding required. And, of course, the regulatory framework for the digital dividend, which we are pleased to hear that ICASA has already started working on. And then switch-off can only be planned once sufficient penetration is achieved. That's important because we can't leave people without services. And if you look at the timeline, if we assume a launch of March 2011, it gives only 8 months to basically roll out the entire television, digital television service to the entire population of South Africa. And that's just not going to be achievable in 8 months. So in our view, November 2011 is just not achievable, irrespective of what happens around other discussions. If you look at today, if we have to move with everything in order, November 2011 is just not achievable. But I think more than anything else, those critical success factors that we've highlighted, if you look at the five that we've highlighted, none of those are actually in place as of today. So yes, there is regulations, but as broadcasters, we haven't got licenses yet to broadcast on digital. The affordable set-top boxes are not available in retail. The marketing campaigns are not really in place. Customer support hasn't really been put in place. And coverage, I guess coverage is starting to roll out, but we need to have a quick rollout of that network to be able to achieve a quick dual elimination period. So really none of those facilities are really completely in place yet. From an SABC perspective, the impact of these delays has some implications for us as a business, and I'm just going to highlight two key ones. The first one is that if the time to launch is extended significantly, there is a potential of missing the 2015 deadline for analog protection, and of course that will affect our services quite drastically. If there is interference on analog services and we don't have protection, we're unable to switch them off by those deadlines, then it will affect the ability for people to continue receiving those services. And from a strategic perspective for SABC, there is the potential that as pay TV services grow, people move on to digital via satellite service, because satellite services that are broadcasting today are digital already. They have a set-top box they receive, and they do receive SABC services via that as well. So it could result in a satellite-led pay migration process, which is not ideal for us. There is increased competition in the market, and that increased competition will erode our market share, audiences, and revenue, and that affects our sustainability in the long term. And given this context, I think the SABC will be compelled to start looking at other aspects of its multi-channel strategy until DTT is launched, and this involves looking at the benefit of going on of other platforms that will make up the context of a broader multi-channel strategy for SABC. And then just in terms of what needs to be done to unlock the process, because it's not that it's impossible to get the process moving. Clearly, broadcast licenses will have to be issued, so ICASA will have to undergo that process to give broadcasters licenses. Set-top box conformance schemes to comply to the set-top box standards that have been established at the South African Bureau of Standards, that will have to be put in place. And this is really the process that ensures we don't end up with pirate boxes in the market or substandard boxes that people are buying. They know that they need to buy something that works. Making affordable set-top boxes available, that needs to be put into retail. Customer support schemes. And I guess coordination is one of the critical issues. And that requires the reestablishment of the coordination body of, that the Digital Zonga used to perform that process. And I guess we are again encouraged to hear that that will happen shortly. So if these things are put in place as of today, the process can move ahead. But there are things that still have to happen for us to be able to get a commercial launch up and running. If I can just hand over back to Zweli to concluding remarks.
I'm not going to take too much time. I think just in conclusion, I think while we understand the necessity of a review as a policy imperative for the country, I think one of the considerations for the SABC is that we find ourselves in a difficult environment where the financial viability of the SABC has been under pressure for the last 2 to 3 years. At the same time, we now have new competition, mostly from pay operators. And because our funding model is still predicated on advertising revenue, any negative impact on our audiences is going to have serious impact on our sustainability. So even though we understand the necessity for the review, I think if there is any further delay, the SABC does need to launch a multi-channel strategy. We need to have as many channels as possible in order to protect our audience so that that doesn't impact on our advertising revenue. And that's essentially what we say. We understand the necessity for a review, but we will have to consider other options to have more channels in the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Azira?
Thank you, Chairperson. As part of your presentation, you say that South Africa has the intellectual property and skills in order to locally design and manufacture set-up boxes. Now, my question is, the set-up boxes that you use for the pilot project, who designed them? Which company? Is it South African based? You said you have got about 3,000 that's part of the pilot project. And then, you know, in the next slide in your rollout period where you say where we are now, the 10th of May, and you look at March 2011, you've not worked out in that time frame the time that it's going to use for the production of the set-up boxes. Or are these set-up boxes available? Do you know where they are going to be manufactured? Has there been a cost analysis of what they're going to cost? Because to me, the set-up boxes is key. Like ICASA has said, that we have to get the set-up boxes out first before we go with the switch over. So can you tell us the set-up boxes that you've used for the pilot project, what the cost was? Was it produced in South Africa?
Okay, the set-up boxes that we used in the pilot were from two South African-based companies, LTQEC and RCNC Manufacturing, and RCNC Manufacturing. LTQ is based in Durban, and RCNC is based in Cape Town. The specifications that we used for that project were based on the DVB-T standard, as I mentioned, MPEG-4 compression, etc. Yes, it was the standards that were agreed and signed off at the time, and they were produced or assembled here in South Africa and specifically contracted by the SABC for this period. Obviously, because the volumes of those set-top boxes were quite small for a pilot period, the costs aren't really comparable for volume production, but the costs were in the... I guess because of our contractual obligations, I can't actually reveal the exact cost of those, but they were in the region of the anticipated cost of 700 Rand or less than that if you had to place a retail cost on them. So they were within the expected parameters that had been suggested up until now, if not lower. In the timeline that I have suggested, I looked at the broadcast timeline, but in there, we're looking at the critical path there. The set-top box manufacturing, because we've already got an agreed set-top box standard that's been published by the South African Bureau of Standards, which is relatively similar to the one that we used on the pilot, we know that there are manufacturers that are already almost ready to be able to roll out the set-top boxes at production level because the specification has already been published and they understand what the specification is. So within that time frame, in parallel, set-top box manufacturers can manufacture those in a period of 6 to 9 months. It will run parallel and make it available in retail as we want to launch the services. But as of today, none of those boxes are available in retail. The only boxes that are available are the boxes commissioned by the SABC for the pilot, and I guess the boxes commissioned by Mnet in parallel for their pay TV pilot. And those were selected by us and given to users selected by us. So they haven't been made available freely to purchase.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the SABC for their presentation. I'm going to back to the pilot study of 3,000 participants. I want to know, of those 3,000 participants, the people with disabilities included, people were deaf people and blind people, were they included in the, to that pilot? And then the results of the pilot, you said that to make services accessible. So this is, this service is not then accessible for in this pilot project. So I would expect that this digital will then make services accessible in the pilot project, and not will make it accessible. So you said it's been tested in Durban, Johannesburg and Pretoria, but the areas like in the Northern Cape, since I started in this committee, Northern Cape always complained about accessibility to television. I would have expected you to go and pilot it in areas where they've always been complaining about accessibility to television. So I know the funds are limited, but we really need to cover those areas that has been always been complaining on accessibility to television.
In terms of the pilot, we did have people with disabilities on the pilot across a range of disabilities. I unfortunately don't have the figures of exactly how many people and that with me, but we definitely did have people with disabilities on the pilot. In addition to that, we conducted a specific piece of research to look at the types of services that the disabled community would be able to access on digital services and what they are looking for from television. And based on that, we have made some, assessment of what can be done with digital, although it was impossible to test everything on the pilot for technical and other reasons. But in terms of what we can roll out with digital, we are very aware of it, we are very aware of what technology can do. Some of it has been tested, not necessarily completely on the pilot, but within lab settings, based on the feedback that we received on the research that we got. And there is further research that we intend conducting within a different piece of research around these types of services. But I think in short the answer is that digital can offer a range of additional services that we cannot do in analog, such as audio description, multiple subtitles, subtitles in different languages, etc., that can be done on top of the existing services that would run on digital. And some of those have been tested within the lab environment. Some of them we have tested on a technical level, but we have not necessarily deployed fully into the pilot because that was impossible given the constraints that we had on the pilot and some of the technical issues that we faced on that.
Just to add, I think if possible, we'll be able to prepare a version of the DTT pilot that we did and make it available to the committee so that you can go through it and review it. In terms of the areas that were chosen, I think one of the limitations obviously was the funding that was available for us to cover the country, but also it was the limitation in terms of the availability of spectrum in terms of the areas that we could go to.
If there's a change of policy, what will happen to the time frame? Do we have to go through all these steps again that you have indicated? So that there can be those standards, trials. Do we have to do all of those things, and what's the time frame?
I think it depends on what the implications of the change of standard are. I think ICASA explained in their presentation earlier, as long as the change in the standard doesn't require us to change the agreement that was reached in terms of the ITU agreement. If we can still do a frequency plan that falls within that agreement and doesn't interfere, then there shouldn't be that that much delay in terms of this time, and so we should be able to continue as planned. Obviously, if the change in standard then results in having to seek a complete review, that may take time, but where we're sitting, we're not really certain how long that time will be. And I think the direction can be given by the department in terms of how long that process will be, because it involves the region and all of the other countries that are sitting in Region 1.
What I'm asking is, let's say if a decision is taken to go onto a Japanese standard 2 months from now, so there's a clear policy change and that is now announced and all that, what will it take now for you to switch and to do all the trials, etc.? What's the time frame, the shortest possible time frame? Are you able to indicate that?
I mean, I think it's difficult to indicate now. I mean, part of the review has to provide us with the assessment in terms of the changes technically that are required to happen. So once we have that, we can only make a determination once we see the results of the review and the direction that the review is giving us. And only on those basis can we move forward. At the moment, it would just be speculative to say, you know, how long it will take us to conduct another pilot, or even whether we do necessarily actually have to conduct a pilot in order to move forward.
Okay, are there any further questions? Pastor?
I just wanted to know about the study, the findings of the study. Have you consulted with the minister as a policymaker? And also, in your choosing the two companies you have mentioned, are they two or three? What was your criteria? I'll take in that.
I think in terms of the pilot study report on the study has been submitted to the department, and obviously they've been given briefings as we've been progressing along the way, but a report has been submitted to the department. And of course, as we finish up the last book of research, additional reports will be provided to the department with every additional piece of information that we gain out of the pilot. In terms of the selection of the set-top box manufacturers that was selected through a tender process via the SABC with a published tender, and the two vendors were selected via the process.
I thank the SABC for the presentation. Centec? For a question?
I hope that the laptop does not talk to that thing, because it does not have a laptop box. So next time there must be one.
That's analog, Chair. We need to deal with that.
Chairperson, Mr. Vardy, just in a lighter note, Mr. Vardy, just in a lighter note, the SABC a couple of years ago, they said analog was the future of broadcasting in South Africa. And I can tell you, I've got the facts because I've done many interview with some of the big shots of the SABC trying to convince the people of South Africa.
Which year was this?
It was in the late 90s. Or, let's say middle 90s. But analog was the future.
Yeah, and now they're coming with something else. They're coming to sell us another product. And the trial cost 80 million rand. And the first thing SABC must do is get another computer. Yes, it is working, man. Mr. Vidya, over to you. Welcome to you and the team. Russian.
Yes. Good afternoon, Chairperson. Good afternoon, members of the committee. Chairperson, will keep our presentation very short and hopefully non-controversial. What we hope to do is stick to the issues that affect Centec as an operator. Before I do so, Chairperson, please may I introduce my team. On my right is the acting CEO, Mr. Dingaan Dubey. On my left, next to me, is the acting CEO, Ms. Beverly Brenier. Next to her is a board member, Mr. Masoodi Dlamini. Sitting next to him is Mr. Siddhi Kassam. And finally, Mr. Mondi Ngleni. He takes care of government relations and stakeholder relations. Chairperson, our presentation reviews the rollout of DTT, funding, and the 2010 target. Our particular focus is on the risks to the rollout, the possibility of increased funding, and our concern relating to signal coverage to meet service obligations. These risks, Chairperson, flows from ICASA's frequency plan and its recent regulations. On the issue of standardization, Centec has not yet taken a view on the possibility of migrating either to DVB-T2 or any other standard. We are, however, initiating a study to examine the comparison between DVB-T2 and other systems. This study will analyze the implications of migration to either one of the two standards. Today, Chairperson, we intend to focus on the current DTT challenges, because unless these are dealt with decisively and soon, implementation delays may undermine the agreed timetable for dual illumination and analog switch-off. Mr. Dubey will talk to the issues.
Thank you very much, Chairperson of Centec Board, Mr. Patel, the Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Communication, members of the Portfolio Committee on Communication. Centec is delighted to make a presentation on the project rollout, DTT regulation, spectrum plan, and the conclusion. On the DTT project, we'd like to outline that currently Centec covers 33% of the population. And what Centec would like to inform members of the portfolio committee is that when Cabinet took a decision in February 2007, it said a digital signal shall be available from 1 November 2008. So Centec has made that digital signal on 1 November 2008. Therefore, it has complied with, in the absence of regulations, in the absence of frequency plans, Centec did not want to embarrass the country and say a digital signal is not available. Therefore, we should make it very clear that as people come and present here, that in the absence of those regulations and the frequency plan, Cabinet resolved that a digital signal will be available on the 1st. Therefore, commercial availability of a digital signal does not mean the beginning of migration. It only means when the broadcasters will commercialize their activities. To date, Centec has received $1 billion for CAPEX, and 525 million has been transferred into its account. For operational expenditure, Centec has been allocated 330 million, but to date has received 100 million. And the 100 million was available when Centec was conducting dual illumination. As the broadcasters have correctly said, they were running trials. Centec was not putting the infrastructure as a trial. It was rolling out a digital-ready infrastructure in a phased approach. Centec intends to cover 60% of the population by 2011. Centec appeared before the Portfolio Committee on Communication in March
and the Portfolio Committee on Communication approved 161 for a project of Centec for the current financial year. So for this current financial year, Centec is going to roll out in order to achieve 60% of the population, but we will indicate the challenges. The risks are the following. On 15 February 2010, this year, ICASA published the final DTT regulations. The regulations have assigned two network of frequencies, which in technical term would be multiplexes, one for SABC and Trinity Broadcasting Network, and the other one for ETV and MNET. Centec's initial rollout assumed two network of frequencies, and to date, the government continues to fund Centec for the rollout of two network of frequencies. Now, the final DTT regulation published by ICASA on 15 February 2010 are unfavorable to Centec and will reduce Centec's revenue substantially. ICASA has indicated that in 2008, the Minister of Communication issued the Broadcasting Digital Migration Policy. And the digital migration policy said on co-assignment, the network of frequencies designated for public broadcasting should be co-assigned and managed by Centec as a common carrier on a non-preferential and non-discriminatory basis. It further said Centec should also provide broadcasting signal distribution to commercial broadcasters, which should be provided on a non-preferential and non-discriminatory basis. And on this particular instance, ICASA has deviated from the BDM policy. And that on its own has created a problem in the execution of the BO of the DTT project. The final regulations define multiplex as a frequency designated for DTT. Now, the manner in which ICASA has defined multiplex in the final DT regulations falls under a licensable category. However, ICASA contradicts itself in the reasons document on digital migration at paragraph 27.12 by ruling, we quote, the authority has decided that the questions as to who will assume the responsibility of multiplexing will be left to the broadcasters on the basis that multiplexing is not, in and of itself, a licensable activity in terms of the ECA and certainly does not constitute ECNS. Centec is of the view that ICASA erred in this regard because the ECA gives four categories of licenses: ECNS, ECS, Broadcasting Service, and Radio Frequency Spectrum License. If the ICASA regulations define multiplex as a network of frequencies, therefore ICASA cannot say multiplexing is therefore not a licensable category. Centec is challenging ICASA on the following basis. Multiplexing and encoding are part of multi-channel distribution. If we look at the definition of multi-channel distribution in the ECA, that is one of the points that Centec is challenging ICASA on. Because multi-channel distribution is defined in the ECA as a broadcasting signal distribution service that provides broadcasting signal distribution for more than one channel at the same time and on the same signal. And multi-channel distribution is construed accordingly. The SABC in their presentation says they will be doing multi-channel broadcasting. So if there is a multi-channel broadcasting, there must be a multi-channel signal distribution from a transmission point of view. Now, to go on further, if ICASA says, Centec did not for a moment doubt that ICASA is the regulator, but if ICASA contradicts itself in this statement by saying multiplexing is not a licensable category, and go on in the same sentence and say, actually, it can never be an ECNS. Therefore, it is saying it is a licensable activity and it is a broadcasting services activity. That creates a problem, and we will show why it creates a problem. Section 31(2) of the ECA requires a broadcaster to possess a radio frequency spectrum in addition to a services license.
And Section 31(1) of the ECA requires CENTEC to possess a radio frequency spectrum license in order to transmit the content of the broadcaster. Furthermore, Section 32(1) of the ECA prohibits any person from possessing any radio apparatus unless in possession of a radio frequency spectrum license or exempted from possessing such. CENTEC is not exempted from possessing a radio frequency spectrum license. As we speak today, all the transmission infrastructure that CENTEC is rolling out are radio apparatus. Therefore, we would like to inform this portfolio committee that in terms of the DTT regulations, CENTEC is not allowed to possess those radio apparatus because it does not have a radio frequency spectrum issued by ICASA. Even if we can say Section 92(2) of the ECA protects CENTEC, that is not a scenario. Because Section 92(2) protects entities who were possessing a radio frequency spectrum or a telecommunication providing telecommunication services without a license. Therefore, the assignment of radio frequency spectrum cannot be covered by Section 92(2). We therefore would like to say that CENTEC is currently operating equipment in contravention of Section 32(1) of the CECA, as those are radio apparatus and without a radio frequency spectrum. The interpretation of CENTEC is that according to Section 31(1) and Section 31(2), the ECA requires that a radio frequency spectrum be co-assigned between a broadcaster and a network operator. And that was contained in the BDM policy of issued by the Minister of Communications in 2008. This we have said, and we're saying that ICASA is wrong in pronouncing that there is a legislative cap under the ECA regarding multiplexing and encoding. We have outlined here that multiplexing and encoding form part of the broadcasting signal distribution and can therefore not be unlicensable categories. Now we want to talk about the radio frequency spectrum issued by ICASA on the 18th of November 2009. To say in non-technical terms, the ICASA plan uses a low power emissions and the CENTEC one uses high power. And what in as much as ICASA says there is engagement, what we want to highlight to this portfolio committee is that in March when CENTEC appeared, the portfolio committee approved a project for CENTEC for 2010-2011. With the ICASA plan, we cannot order equipment in order to achieve the 60% that has been approved because we need to use higher ERPs in order to continue with the CENTEC plan and agree to lower them. It is correct that CENTEC has formally addressed a letter to ICASA for them to consider allowing CENTEC to operate at lower ERPs on its existing infrastructure and go up to higher ERPs when the analog switch off happens. Now the problem that we want to say is that the ICASA plan is short of radio of spectrum. Well, if CENTEC has to comply with the ICASA plan as it is, some people who are receiving an analog signal will have to be switched off to make way for a digital signal. And we have to take into account the fact that in all material times, the migration from analog to digital should protect the existing analog services. The digital signal should not compromise existing analog services. Now, if CENTEC has to comply with the ICASA plan, it requires additional funding for capital expenditure and operational expenditure due to the fact that with the ICASA plan with low ERPs, additional sites have to be identified, and it is not known to CENTEC today whether those additional sites will be green sites or not. If it is a green site, we will require
environmental impact assessment studies to be conducted, which takes almost 12 months or more. Now, a very significant portion, estimated at 10% of the television households, will be deprived of the benefit of receiving DTT by means of low-cost indoor portable receivers, short vertical rod or bunny ears. The center complementary plan provides a benefit for indoor portable reception, while the ICASA plan has a cost to the viewers in that they might have to buy outdoor areas. Now, what we're saying here is that the center complementary frequency plan used a contiguous band spectrum planning principle, while the ICASA plan uses an allotment planning principle of spectrum. Now, with a center plan, you could easily migrate and achieve the digital dividend as you migrate. But with a ICASA plan, you first have to make sure that you have rolled out and there is digital infrastructure rolled out before you can actually start switching off. In a simple example, South Africa in the metropole areas is the house is densely populated, but in the rural areas is sparsely populated. You would use different receive equipment to get the signal. Now, with a ICASA plan, you would need to get more areas, or you would need to change the areas in order to receive that signal. A particular point in question is the Polokwane one, an area called Sesheho. With a ICASA plan, you would achieve this area that is in, I'm colorblind, but I think it's red, or it's pink. Yes. But with a center plan, the transmitter there would be in a position to cover a greater area with the existing bunny antennas. So, in conclusion, Centec is saying compliance with the ICASA frequency plan in its current form will require a CAPEX and additional OPEX. More time will be required to achieve analog switch-off. There is currently not enough spectrum in the ICASA frequency plan to achieve the full digital switch-off. Properly understood, in terms of the ECA, multiplexing is a broadcasting signal distribution activity and should be licensed as such.
Thank you very much, Bernadette, Patricia, Eric.
Thank you, Chairperson. As I listen to your presentation, it is a bit disturbing to hear that there is a lot of differences between Centec and ICASA. ICASA's got a lot of regulations that sort of troubled your operations. I'm not going to go into detail. For instance, you mentioned you can't buy certain equipment because the ICASA rules say, or regulatory say, that is radio apparatus or whatever. But I can't understand why Centec and ICASA is not talking to each other. This whole migration project is so, so important. And Centec and ICASA is under the umbrella of the Department of Communications. How on earth is this possible, and what are you going to do about it? It's such as like a chessmate situation. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, thank you very much, Mr. Van der Berg. Centec and ICASA, when Cabinet announced the date of 1 November 2008, in 2007, Centec addressed a letter to ICASA requesting making an application for radio frequency spectrum so that we can be ready, because we were anticipating that come rain or high water, 1 November 2008, a digital signal at least has to be on. So when we started engaging ICASA in 2007 on this particular matter,
sorry to the person, I'm not satisfied with this question.
Then what happened?
Or with the answer.
You engaged them, then what happened?
Person, thank you very much. When we engaged ICASA in 2007, it said to us, in the absence of policies, they cannot assist us. At the very same time, we then addressed a letter to the Minister of Communications, saying we submitted an application, ICASA cannot adjudicate on the application, but there is a date of 1 November 2008, that CENTEC cannot allow the country not to have a digital switch on. So that we addressed a letter to ICASA, informing them that we need to go on in this regard. And engagements have been happening with ICASA, that's why ICASA is saying it is happening. The DOC is assisting in facilitating those meetings in making sure that the process goes on.
If I can ask Chairperson, when are you going to resolve all the problems? Because at this stage, there's a coverage of 33%, and you are aiming for 60%. And something must happen very, very quickly. Otherwise, we are in big, big trouble.
I think as ICASA has said, that we said that a formal letter has gone to ICASA, where we're requesting ICASA that they allow CENTEC to operate within their frequency plan, but at a certain point allow us to go to the CENTEC higher ERPs in order for CENTEC to achieve the 60% that it has committed before this Portfolio Committee on Communication.
Chair, may I just add that, as ICASA stated earlier, the DOC is facilitating a meeting for this Friday, particularly to try to resolve that issue.
Chairperson, this is more than just a tiff between ICASA and CENTEC. In fact, the way I read this is that is the interpretation of the law. There's the ICASA Act, there's the ECA Act, and CENTEC say that their interpretation of the law is that ICASA is wrong. And it's, I put emphasis on interpretation, because we all can interpret the law differently. Now, when you get to that stage where you've got different interpretations of the law, which we made as Parliament, then who must resolve that interpretation? There's only one way, and that's the courts. That's why the courts are there. But we cannot just make an assumption that ICASA interpretation is wrong because it impacts on the business of CENTEC. So that's why I say it is a lot more serious than just engaging. Because even if you do engage with ICASA, but your interpretation is already that ICASA is wrong and your interpretation is right, you're never going to find a solution. So I think we need to look further to find a solution on the interpretation of the law. Because once you get lawyers arguing amongst themselves, go to court and let the court decide which interpretation is right.
Does it mean that what you are doing at the moment is not consistent with the regulations that have been issued?
That's correct, sir.
And if there's a penalty, if you violate the regulations, if you breach the regulations, what happens?
And the regulation prescribes a penalty for non-compliance.
You could be punished. All right, Mr. Kulwani.
Sir, I don't want to enter into the tit-for-tat match or between ICASA and the CENTEC, but I think the issue of the legislation needs to be clarified. It's a pity because we get it now under this presentation. I'm sure if we've been be informed earlier, so that if there's a conflict in these two pieces of legislation, we are here for, we do amend legislation also.
honorable member, if we are properly briefed that there is a problem and so on. Maybe we need to look into that issue deeply, separate in terms of exactly where are the bone of contention and so on. But the second issue, Chair, which I wanted to check is that you see there is a problem here. You see, Chair, if we are a state entity and cabinet take a decision and say this is what we want to have as a country, what is it which you must do as a state entity? Because I think that's where the issue starts. If cabinet resolves, you see, what ICASA vote cabinet, and the CENTEC, unfortunately, at that time, because of they had to respond to the minister or whoever who gave that directive. I think that's where the problem is. If I just read the presentation and the way they presented it, that we had cabinet taking a decision at one point, we need this. But at that point, there was a policy vacuum and also no regulation, then and so on. But maybe it's a matter, Chair, which we need to look into that. The honorable member say she knows what happened. But, Chair, the issue which I wanted to deal with is that, you see, Chair, maybe we need to start to deal with these things, because most of the time, if there is a problem, and if we don't get it right ourselves here, it will continue to be a problem. I think we can't equate ICASA and CENTEC equal being under DOC, because they are not. The other one is an independent regulator which is appointed by parliament processes. The other one is an anti-state entity under the minister. So I'm saying, Chair, it's important so that as there are problems, you don't just throw everything to the department while you are not responding and so on, as if we are talking about two entities which are the same. I'm not saying the OC does not have the role to play, but I think it will be important to do that. But the issue, Chair, is that I want to check how does, you see, you are talking about your rollout of the infrastructure. Now, the issue is that, and we have incurred cost to roll out that infrastructure. I assume to comply with the ICAP regulation, we have to incur cost to do that again. Now, but if maybe you continue, what become the implication? Because I understand the broadcasters are paying you. If you keep your current one, the high one, are you getting the same return to the broadcasters? If it's the lower one, what is the comparison even financially? Because you also have to be earning an income as you are rolling out. But what become the challenge in terms of what you get if you change? Which one? You've got the high one, you must go to the lower one. But I assume they are rates for the higher one. I'm not sure that the rates for the current one are the same as the rates for the lower one. What becomes the impact on your income? So that the discussion with ICASA, I support, because ICASA, when they were presenting, they indicated that they are also looking that aspect. The cost which have been incurred and so on. Because I'm raising that because I don't understand the technicality part of it. But I'm assuming that if you keep the high one, but the regulation is saying the low one, these broadcasters, including SABC, I suppose, they will say we'll pay what the regulator prescribes. And you might be running at a loss and even failure to recoup your money, which you have used to roll out for some time, because they are not going to pay you on the higher one. They will say the regulator is saying, the police, the regulator is saying the lower one, if it's 80 rand, we pay 80 rand, even we're supposed to pay 150. So I just want to check that, what become the impact, just to understand that particular aspect. I'm just assuming, I don't know whether there is any difference. It might not be no difference, the same part. Thanks.
Chairperson, if we were to follow the ICASA plan, we would need more sites that would be more CapEx. If we followed our plan, then no further CapEx would be required. Now, as to how we're going to determine the tariff, we would determine a tariff based on high power. However, there are other factors that come into play when we're determining a tariff for signal distribution. In my view, going high power, using our tariff which we would apply in those circumstances, it would be better to stick to the Centec plan. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Just to add on what the chairperson has said, the Centec tariff that is working on for digital era was based on an understanding that the BDM policy had said that the frequency shall be co-assigned between Centec and the broadcaster. So we need to work a different tariff model now in order to comply with the ICASA frequency plan and the DTT regulations, which will require CAPEX and OPEX.
Chairperson, can I just get back to the basics? You are saying at the time when government said that this is the date by when Centec must be ready, you went ahead and you started working to be ready for that date. At that stage, we had no regulations from ICASA. So ICASA then came afterwards with regulations, and that made you then that you did not comply with regulations because they were not in place. But also the law cannot be applied retrospectively. But what I think you should have done was that when the work that you are doing is not in line or does not speak to the ECA Act or the ICASA Act, the point raised by Honorable Kowani here, to have approached Parliament and say, we are now in conflict with the law. Because you are not in competition with ICASA. ICASA is a regulatory authority. You are a company. And have you applied your mind about how to bring you in line with the law? Or ask the portfolio committee to look at amending the law? But you can't also have a state-owned entity breaking the law. So that's why I said let's come back to basics and let's look at how we can find a solution to this problem. Because my understanding of the law is that the law can be applied retrospectively. So what you have done in terms of rolling out before the law was there is not illegal. And again, I based my first argument on what you said, interpretation. You did say you interpret the law this way, they interpret the law that way. But I'm looking to find some solution now.
Can I suggest, look, we're not going to resolve this matter here. There is a meeting that is scheduled for the coming Friday. We understand that this is going to be is an important part of the work here. We have to get this one right. And either we can find each other on the process. If not, the long and short of it is that Centec will have to comply with the regulatory regime. But if they can find each other, let's give them the time to do that. But we're not going to be able to resolve the matter. If you're not able to find each other Friday or the coming week or two, I think you should alert Parliament so that we can then be aware of what the position is and see what can be done to assist the process. Can we leave it at there? All right. If there are no further questions, then I want to thank Centec. Members, I need a bit more time of committee members. But while Centec is moving out, can I just raise two or three quick issues with you? We have launched an application for a committee visit to the International Broadcasting Center for this coming Friday. Mm-hmm. Provisionally, it has been approved. No.
Has it been approved?
Okay, we're still awaiting approval. Members, can I just have your attention? Yeah? Okay. May I have your attention, please, ANC? We have applied, but they are only approving five, a delegation of five people. not the entire committee. So if the approval comes through, it might mean two opposition party members and three ANC members will go for the trip this week Friday to visit the IVC. The second thing is, we have received this correspondence from the minister in which he is indicating his preferred candidates for the CASA position. I'm told that this matter is tabled for reporting in the House tomorrow afternoon. The committee has to approve this recommendation for it to go to the House tomorrow. Are we able to do this now? Well, we have to go back to the House. If we agree as a committee with these recommendations, then I have to go to the House tomorrow and report, and then the House has to approve these names. Mr. Kulwani?
Chair.
Maybe we need to finalize it, but maybe if you can indicate how soon should we reflect back to the for processing, so that maybe we can determine whether we can have some time maybe to discuss